We live in fear. Fear of failure, commitment, each other, and the beyond. It's one of the few things that unites us all. Salem, Massachusetts knows this more than most, which is why Salem Horror Fest will return in October to explore societal themes of fear and anxiety in the Halloween capital of the world. Prepare yourself for 2 weeks of terror with screenings, panels, podcasts, special guests, parties, premieres, and more in the haunted and historic Witch City. Raise hell with Linnea Quigley and George C. Romero. Conjure demons with the Faculty of Horror and repent before the latest film from Darren Lynn Bousman. Behold Wolfman's Nards with the Monster Squad's Andre Gower and relive your kinder trauma for the New England premiere of Scary Stories documentary. I will be presenting the opening night keynote speech on October 4th, followed by the 30th anniversary celebration of Elvira, Mistress of the Dark with Cassandra Peterson, and that will be followed by a screening of our new Halloween film. Tickets and weekend passes are available now. To overcome fear, we must first understand it. SalemHorror.com.
Tonight's episode of Shockwaves is also brought to you by Fright Rags. Fright Rags is the number one source for horror t-shirts, with specially curated collections created by renowned horror artists. They offer the best art and the best quality anywhere. Recently released, the Teen Wolf collection is now available, featuring all new shirts and enamel pins, as well as exclusive shirts and enamel pins for the documentary Haunters, The Art of the Scare, which is now streaming on Netflix. They also have the new Stephen King birthday line and The Predator. So head to www.fright-rags.com now. You can enter code SUMMERSHOCK10 at checkout to get 10% off your entire order. Again, that's SUMMERSHOCK10 at checkout. So head to www.fright-rags.com now.
Hello and welcome to episode 114 of Shockwaves. I'm one of your hosts, Rob G. Holy smokes. This is the whole gang is here. Elric Kane.
Yes. Cheddar Goblin to you.
You're now the Cheddar Goblin
bandwagon.
We forgot to ask about that last week.
I know.
It was a total fail on our part.
Sam Zimmerman has a Cheddar Goblin doll. I need to figure out how to get one of those.
Because I'm very curious, was that a commercial that he came up with, or did somebody, like an artist friend? Like, I'm just curious about that.
Ryan Turek is here. What's your insight into Cheddar Goblin?
I think Cheddar Goblin is pure Panos. Okay. Also, when I saw Cheddar Goblin back at Sundance, I said that Cheddar Goblin should be elected during the midterm elections this year and be our president.
Yeah.
He would have a shot.
Yeah, I'd say so. He's
Cheddar huge. Goblin for president.
Yeah. If he passed out mac and cheese at his campaign rallies, I'd be there.
He should be like the new Full Moon movie.
Totally, yeah.
Whatever. Rebecca McKendry is also here.
Hello.
Hi, everybody.
Woohoo.
All right, we're past the whiteout. We're up to Abbey Road right now.
Abbey Road. We're back at Abbey Road.
I just got to get used to it.
Don't get used to it, guys. This will happen for like one more week and then it'll be all
I'm
crazy.
About to disappear for 3 weeks. Yeah, I think Ryan's out for a stretch. Yeah. We're in and out.
It's going to be October's insane, as it normally is. So, you know, but we got some fun stuff lined up.
We got stuff going on.
We
do have some really cool bonus episodes. I'll mention up at the top that Elric and I will be at the Knoxville Film Festival. Which is the third weekend of October.
It's pretty late if we can figure out how to tape it.
We're doing a live show there regardless, so come to the Knoxville Film Festival.
Becca's there for like a day.
I'm there for like 4 days. Yeah, so. I'm literally there for like 36 hours. It's going to be crazy.
And we can talk about the other ones. So we're doing a couple of Halloween ones, literally Halloween the movie.
Well, we're going to be Beyond Fest with Nick Castle. So
that'll be great.
Come to Beyond Fest on October 6th. They're going to be showing Halloween 1978. We're going to take a little break, do Shockwaves, have a nice conversation with Nick Castle, and then we're going to show Halloween 2018.
But they kicked me off for Nick Castle. I wanted to be there, but they're like, no, Nick Castle is replacing you.
Actually, you called and said you were not interested. So.
Don't spin
it that way, man.
Okay.
Yeah, man.
But they're going to be doing flash tattooing.
Oh,
so
my God.
You get a free tattoo.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
You did it last time, right?
I did it last time with Evil Dead.
What's the flash tattoo?
Oh, I don't know what the designs are, but they're Halloween themed.
I don't know what
it is. Malik Akkad will be there to present Halloween 78 and Halloween 18. And then they're also going to be showing Black Christmas. I don't know what the ticket situation is, but I think they're both sold out. So if you're going, see us.
And yeah. if and you're then, not, you'll hear our show.
No.
Yeah, and if you missed out on a ticket, just tweet at Ryan Turek. And just
I'm sure he can hook you up. Totally and get ask you one. One. Just, on just poke him.
He's got ask a list.
He got you because he's underscore Ryan Turek.
Oh. Perfect. That's
right.
Perfect.
There you go. So there's that, and then there's the Halloween convention, right?
H4O.
The 40th anniversary. Yeah.
And we're going to figure out what day. We'll know closer to the date which day we'll be there. But sure. everybody's been asking if we're going to be there, and yes, we will.
We will.
Are we talking to someone specific, or is that still TBD?
TBD.
TBD.
But I will hopefully be getting to meet Tommy Lee Wallace for the first time in my life, which would be a thrill.
If he's a guest.
He's still my dream. I know. I think he is.
We should just get Tommy Lee Wallace.
That would be great.
I want him there here or want him somewhere.
He's Sean Clark, you're probably listening. Tommy Lee for
Tommy Lee is
for the Halloween convention. That would be wonderful.
We'll just do that.
Cool. Well, I'm very excited about that.
Yeah.
Let's talk podcasts really quick. One that I have to recommend to you guys if you haven't been listening. Wondery does a lot of great work. Obviously, Mark Ramsey, who's been on our show, has produced the Inside series with them, Inside Psycho, Inside yep. Exorcist, and Inside Jaws. Love them all. But they have just debuted – well, not just. It's been several weeks now. They have debuted something called Dr. Death. It's a – I guess you'd call it true crime. It is one of the most horrific true crime cases I've ever heard in my life. It was kind of ongoing up until now.
It's not six... Jack Kevorkian who was Dr.
No, it is a guy named Christopher Dunch who is a spinal surgeon and somehow managed to mangle 33 patients, two of which died, but kept doing it for years and years before the health board could actually stop him. It's just – the story is so unbelievable and it – episode one alone creeped me out more when they describe what he did to people and their anatomy. It is an unbelievable story. I think they just debuted episode five. Six is the final one, so that's probably next week.
I'm so – because like when you have surgery, like it's a room full of people. Like did people not notice him like rearranging body parts?
No, they definitely did, but it's not that. It's like – it's really interesting because it goes very deep into – a lot of the issues with the medical profession, especially in this country, because other countries obviously have, different forms of insurance. It's mostly free, but here it's a big money thing. And a lot of it is that neurosurgeons or people that do this complicated surgery literally bring in millions of dollars to a hospital. Mm-hmm. And so they may overlook any rumors they may have heard from previous places, but I just, 33 people.
That's wild.
And we're talking about paralysis, like paralyzed for life. Just the details when you hear about what he did to some of these people. And it's like, is he a complete sociopath? Did he intentionally do it? Is he just incompetent?
It's like the blood work guy from Staircase, the guy, remember him?
Yeah.
And
it's
just like he's doing it all wrong. Why is he doing it wrong?
But keeps doing it. And you don't know why. But anyway, this has been one of the most riveting listens I've had. I've already recommended it to two or three friends that are like diehard true crime fans, and it's taken all my restraint not to search what happened to him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which I may have cheated a little bit because I was like, I need to know before this ends. But Dr. Death, strongly recommended. And also, there's some new podcasts here on the Blumhouse Network.
Yeah.
Wait, we're not alone anymore?
No.
We're not alone.
No. Well, we've had Mick Garris's post-mortem, but...
By the way, Mick Garris's new episode with your old buddy, Chuck Russell...
Oh, I haven't heard
it
yet.
...is probably my one of my favorite episodes he's
really?
Ever done.
Really?
Yeah. Chuck Russell comes across just so kind of inspiring, cool and funny, and just kind of open to the universe about how he approaches filmmaking, and I loved it.
Him and Mick have a little history?
Yeah.
They've known each other for a while.
Yeah, it seems like they had similar kind of trajectories at times, working in similar places, but less buddy-buddy, but just it's just a good interview. Yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah, I highly recommend that.
On my queue.
Nice.
We also got to that this morning, actually.
What did you guys listen to?
I listened to Attack of the Queer Wolf this morning.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
That's one of the new Blumhouse shows with Mark Fortin, Michael Kennedy, and Nate Bevers.
Yeah. Really, really good insight into Alex Aja's High Tension.
Uh-huh. Hopefully Alex will never listen to it.
But behind the scenes, I knew it was coming and I love those guys. And they bring a lot of energy and refreshing thoughts on films that I feel like have been psychoanalyzed to death. But it's just their insights are really great.
So, yeah, it's a really,
very
really
funny
fun
too.
Show. Yeah.
And I love, and Ernie, you got to step it up, man. Their producer behind the scenes, he's talkative on that show.
Ernie, you participate in this one?
No.
You got somebody else.
Brennan
chimes in a couple times. Yeah.
He's got music cues ready for the movie.
I did like the part where Mark's like, now let's listen to the audio of the trailer.
No, trailer's like fucking nuts.
And then they got about 30 seconds in, they're like, okay, that's enough.
Yeah, it's all like sound effects. Right? You're like, all right.
No, Brennan Klein, who is producing that one, because admittedly, Brian and I are a little overworked, so we oversaw the process, but Brennan did a lot of kind of on the ground work on this one, and he's been really on the ball with it.
He's on our episode with Chris Landon.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. So yeah, definitely check out Attack of the Queer Wolf.
And then the sixth episode of Fear Initiative, Yeti or not.
Yeti or not.
I guess we have to make this.
I like to wait till the season's over. Oh, really? I like to take it all in as one.
Yeah, there were about, they went through about five different options for that name. I liked Are You Yeti? But they ended up going with Yeti or not.
Yeti or not's good.
Are you Yeti?
Yeti or not.
No, that one, it's been getting a great response, and it definitely kind of bridges the two worlds of D&D and horror. And yeah, they are about to start bringing on some guest stars soon as well. Ooh. Hey, Ernie, you're going to need another microphone. So yeah, but they're going to be bringing on some well-known guest stars to game with them.
Nice.
So it should be fun.
I didn't know this. Did you guys know that Fright Rags has got a podcast?
You know what?
I just added it this morning. I was like, oh, shit.
Listened to the episode zero, which is more like a prequel episode. Yeah. And it's just Ben who runs Fright Rags, and he'll pop in October on this show.
Yep.
Just kind of giving the history of how Fright Rags came to be.
Oh, it's cool.
Which was, just to lead you up until their actual discussions.
Right.
It's pretty good so far. Nice. I love it. And Ben has, I've known Ben for 15 years probably, and he's a kindred spirit. He always jokes that we were separated at birth. Listening to that podcast, he is correct. We absolutely are like twinsies.
That's awesome.
That's a great listen to, and definitely worth it. What's it called? Saturday Night Rewind?
Saturday Night Rewind, yeah.
That's a cool one. Anyone make it to Son of Monster Palooza this weekend? That was the big horror event, which for me kicks off Halloween.
It did.
No,
you did?
But
all right.
Cool thing. So I've been, because I'm in pre-production on the movie, I'm like doing meetings around the clock. And so I picked up Marnie from an art class, and I was like, let's stop and get pizza on the way home. This was on Saturday afternoon. And we walk into it's the art pizza place that's on Magnolia and Hollywood Boulevard. And it was full of people in horror shirts and people in like full horror garb. And I look around and I'm like, what the fuck is going on today?
Convention.
And then I realized it was Monster Palooza, they had taken over my pizza joint, which was awesome.
Well, it was good for Slashback Video, by the way, because everybody would go down the street, go to the pizza place, and then it's by Slashback. But before we get into that, I just want to say thanks to all of the Shockwaves listeners that came out to the Toronto premiere of Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
I was completely overwhelmed by how many people in the audience came up to me and said, hey, I listened to that. In fact, there was one listener who sat right in front of me, and he was like, he turned around, man, I'm sorry if I forgot your name, but he turned and he's like, hey, this is kind of cool, but I love Shockwaves and I'm about to see Halloween and can I get a quick photo? And I was like, sure. And then while I'm sitting there, the usher comes over. She's like, sir, you're in the wrong seat. And I'm like, I am. And she's like, wait, you're in the wrong theater. And I was like, oh, so that's why I disappeared, young gentleman, because we were playing on two different screens.
Oh.
So I wound up not sitting in that theater.
So you never got a photo with him?
I did get a photo. Get a photo.
And then
got
whisked away. Yeah. But we have a giant fan base in Toronto. Which
really?
Is awesome.
That's insane.
Yeah. I like that.
It's a very cosmopolitan city. So it's good.
So now we can say, yeah, we're big in Toronto.
Yeah, it was cool. It was very cool. But yeah, I did go to Monster Palooza. The weekend was kicked off by Halloween Horror Nights. Went to Halloween Horror Nights.
Oh, yeah.
Opening. People who have asked, best mazes. Obviously, we had the Blumhouse maze, so I'm a little biased, but best mazes, Poltergeist, hands down.
Oh,
man. One of the best mazes. It takes you right into the world. You get all the great, Poltergeist beats. Everything's there. Carol Ann screaming. You got the giant skull. You've got all sorts of stuff going on. Halloween 4 was equally awesome.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun with that. The Universal Monsters revamped maze.
I don't want to know. I kind of want to be surprised.
No, you should be.
I just want to know if it's cool.
It's very cool.
All right,
it's very cool. Slash provides the music for it. It was a lot of fun. And then Stranger Things was a giant maze. Giant. Mm-hmm. It's not scary. It's a little repetitive. You've got a Demogorgon popping out like every 5 minutes, and you go and walk through some of the environments, but it is probably the longest, largest maze I've ever walked through at Halloween Horror Nights.
Did you have a huge wait? Because I hear even now, even though it's just opening up, it's the longest waits for anything they've ever done.
It was 130 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
It was 130 when we came out, and we didn't have to, I mean, we didn't have to wait.
Front of the line. Yeah.
Get the front of the line. Get the front of the line, guys. But they literally put, and I don't think they've ever done this before, they put the maze inside one of the Universal sound stages.
Oh, wow. So you can control a lot more.
You walk inside the actual sound stage.
That's kind of neat.
Which was kind of neat. And I'm trying to think of the other mazes that were there. There was a Purge, and then there was the Blumhouse of Horrors maze, and those were fun.
Trick or treat.
Yeah. Great atmosphere.
Oh, did they rearrange it? Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I'm confusing it with the Krampus one. You're right.
Yeah. Trick or treat. Cool. And that was fun, and they broke it up into chapters, much like the film.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So check it out. Monsterpalooza. Good time. You know, I subscribe to the fact that the OG Monsterpalooza that happens in Pasadena is remarkably better and larger and has more of a sense of community. And the Burbank one is a little bit smaller.
True.
And feels like I'm seeing a lot of the same vendors.
But did you see the two new museums? Because they incorporated the museums back into Son of Monsterpalooza.
I saw one museum.
All the way against the wall.
I saw one museum. Well, they were probably the same ones, but yeah, there were museums in the back, and it was mostly art and stuff like that. And some of the I saw like a Pennywise statue. There was like a bunch of stuff, like a penguin. They had penguin.
Yeah, penguin was in there.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. It wasn't as big as like the big showcase one,
right.
All the makeup effects guys come out. I do gotta say though, guys, I'm a little over conventions putting bars in their actual like dealer's room.
It takes or just so much space. It causes a clusterfuck.
Becca, it's not even about that. It's about the assholes who get drunk and then decide to walk around and then harass your girlfriend to the point where I need to get in your face.
Okay. I don't encounter that one as much. I encounter the clusterfuck crowd.
Yeah. I was not exactly thrilled. Poor Ciara, like there was some dickhead behind her who was like messing with her hair or something like that. She turned around and started yelling at him. And then I got over there and I was like, what's going on? She's like, this guy won't keep his hands to himself. He had his girlfriend with him. And I was like, dude, what's the problem? Oh, nothing. And the girlfriend's like, honey, stop. You know, they were both hammered.
Yeah.
But then it was like got to a point where he just like got a little belligerent. I was like, knock it off with the drinking. And that's when he started getting a little sour. And his girlfriend just grabbed him by the face and like whisked him away.
Who goes to a convention afternoon to get hammered?
To get hammered, especially when there's kids there. Anyways, yeah. I'm not saying that to disparage Monsterpalooza because I love Monsterpalooza. I love what Elliot's been doing. I think that it's just like putting a bar just outside or just...
That's a venue thing, though.
Keep that separate. Make everybody go to the restaurant.
Yeah, the grill place was where we always went to drink.
Go after. That's what I do.
But it was good. It was good for a fun afternoon. We just went over there, you know, kind of kicked around the aisles and took a look at some of the cool stuff and then walked over to Slashback or took a drive down to Slashback to see everybody down there.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I had a blast there. I went Friday night with Rifkin, who is my favorite monster kid nowadays. Just his level of enthusiasm. I made questionable decisions at the Vinegar Syndrome table.
There's nothing questionable about that.
Oh, they're questionable, all right.
Did you buy Psycho Cop Returns?
I've already owned Psycho Cop Returns.
That would have been cool to do it with Rifkin, though.
Yeah, no, we went over there. Basically, we're trying to convince them to... they're trying to get his first Riff Coogan movie, Invisible Maniac. But anyway, okay. I digress. So I bought a lot of questionable things from them because... You know, look, I love Vinegar Syndrome, but it's a 50-50 gamble. 70-30. 70-30 for you.
I'm not going to tell you which way.
We did find Nightmare Sisters. So,
Nightmare Sisters.
I'm saying 70-30 the other way. The way you're not thinking.
Got it.
I also bought Psycho Cop Returns while we were in Texas. And notice I did not discuss it on the show because if you don't have
because
anything
Because it's
nice,
that great.
Because it's great.
No, it is great.
Yeah.
But I give them 100% on the kick-ass scale. Like, I love that they do that. I don't care if it's 70-30 in terms of the ones I like and don't like.
Didn't they bring us Bloodhook?
They're responsible for Bloodhook.
And aren't they Liquid Sky?
Yeah.
They're
Liquid Sky.
So therefore they rock all and they're totally fine.
Listen.
Change of pace.
Josh Miller, my dear friend I bring up a lot who watches these movies, he saw the Vinegar Syndrome image that I posted. This is what I bought. And he's like, when am I coming over? Because Bloodhook was one of our discoveries. Liquid Sky was another. So he knew there had to be a gem in here. And so he came over and we went for Body Melt. That was the one that everybody kept commenting.
Is that the Australian movie?
It is an Australian movie.
It's wonderful. It's so trauma.
It's from 1993. Within 10 seconds, we were like, oh, this is Jep.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's really good. I'd never heard of it. That's the thing. It's like we were like halfway through it, and it's like, this is the 90s. All right. First of all, the artwork that they did in the previous years is terrible. Yeah. Like, I recognize one or two of them, but this is not the movie that it is. Like, I'm showing Elric now this weird one.
Glowing eyes. Yeah.
The one that they did, that one right there, is awesome. That's the Vinegar Syndrome box,
yeah,
which is like, oh, what's that? That looks cool. It's got a cool little sleeve.
So if you circle back to a Killer POV episode, I discussed this. It was one of our very first ones, but I found this movie on VHS at Eddie Brandt's.
Oh, my God.
While we were doing Killer POV. Long, long time ago.
I'd like to argue that you've never seen it until you've seen this. And
I would believe that because I watched it on a very shitty VHS. Yeah,
this is what I remember. That's
a terrible image. That's the VHS box, and that's a terrible image.
It is a terrible image. That's the one I remember seeing at Blockbuster.
So I was expecting the stuff, but this is way more street trash. It is. I mean, and there's like, and it made sense when we watched the special feature after, but there's multiple storylines going on. So basically there's two naked people right in the opening. The female is shooting an injection into the guy. You're like, oh, they're doing drugs and sex. It's already dirty. I love it. And then the guy starts – basically, she's like, he's not going to survive it. You know, he gets on the phone call. He's not going to survive until tomorrow. And so he escapes and he starts kind of melting at the gas station. Mm. And then he melts while he's driving a car into a community. And then I guess because he melted outside of his car, it sort of infected other people in the community. But – completely side note, there's two totally early 90s douchebag guys, kids, that are on a cross-country trip, and they end up at a farm with a bunch of, like, Hills Have Eyes family, like a totally inbred, horrific family. One of them hooks up with the daughter, which is just insane. And so you're like, basically, this is the moment when Josh turned, he's like, much like Bloodhook, I have no idea what's coming next. That, like, this movie has got me because that, and also when you're halfway through a movie this entertaining, you're like, how have we never heard of it?
Like, happens,
like, man. There's not even, I mean, the VHS and all, but like, I've never, like, nobody's put it out in any other form. This was a movie that was so beautifully restored, and so crisp in HD. I had to tweet this. I was like, this is the first time I wish my TV was smaller and not in high def because this movie is really making me sick. Like, it literally made me gag at the effects and stuff. That said, the effects are terrific. And now, don't get me wrong. We're not talking about a great movie by any means.
It's like a trauma level of humor as well.
It is, but it's much – I put it above trauma. Like, trauma doesn't take itself too seriously. This doesn't take itself seriously either.
Oh, see, I consider trauma a little higher because it was the same kind of punny – lowbrow sophomoric humor, but trauma at least inserts like a social awareness. This had none of that shit.
But this has an international flavor.
Yeah, it had Australians. Accents go a long way. Yeah. So it's the Australians, and then when it was over, we watched, I think the director did a new bit on it, and its early life was an anthology based on people in the same town. And I was like, oh, that's why they went in these like three or four different directions with it. But if you like Bloodhook, which I know Ryan did, the long version of it,
about that purchase.
If you like that and you like street trash,
yes,
this is a gem for you.
Awesome.
That deserves to be discovered. Right. So Vinegar Syndrome, you got another winner on your hands. Body melt.
I'm going to watch it.
Body melt.
And by the way, listeners, if you have Bloodhooks that you do not want, please send them to my address.
You're just going to have a wall of Bloodhooks. You're making furniture out of Bloodhooks now.
Christmas is coming up.
Well, I mean, you don't turn 41 and then suddenly discover what is possibly the greatest horror film of all time. No, I'm kidding.
Big shit.
Wow.
Elric.
What did we do? We started a school.
Oh, yeah.
We started the Miskatonic Institute of Horror Studies
Elric
in Los Angeles.
And I started a school.
We bought a zoo. me and Becca and Matt Damon.
We bought a zoo.
We bought a zoo.
It's amazing.
But this zoo had Don Coscarelli in it, so that was cool.
Yeah.
It was awesome. You know, Don was in really fine form, and this ended up being like he talked for like 3 hours. It was broken up into sections, and it just went super deep, and it went super personal, very, especially actually spent quite a bit of time, like over probably an hour, just on the pre-Phantasm period, which I think is probably the most interesting because most of us know the least about it. Him being a 19-year-old filmmaker making a feature, his dad helping him, the stuff we didn't even get to on our show when he came on. And he's just a lot of good filmmaking tidbits, a lot of stuff about working with studios and just, you know, totally laid bare. So it was really cool. So it's all kicked off, and now it's a real thing. And Becca's up next late October with Aquatic Horror, which will be more us going to lectures versus this was a calm conversation. Thanks to Jared Rivett, former guest, for an awesome hosting duties. Yeah. But it was super fun.
We had a really good turnout. I met a lot of Shockwaves listeners there. Elric didn't get to because he was on stage running all the tech stuff, but I ran tickets, and a lot of Shockwaves listeners there, and they were awesome.
Yeah, but it was cool. And also, Don's like, I find him really inspirational when he starts talking about that stuff. Like he there was one peer part in particular that got me where he's just talking about, like, you know, almost never did I have an experience where somebody got what the fuck I was doing. Almost never. Like, every project I have, every idea I have, every dream, when I put it out there, people are like, what the fuck is this? I have no idea what this is. I don't want to do it. And so I had to find a way to do it myself. And as somebody who, like, strays towards those kind of movies myself, I took a lot from that. He's like, you just have to find a way to do it and then show them because no one understands. No one can read.
Well, listen, Elric, I mean, you know, Purge versus Predator is not your property.
Well, we'll get there. We'll get there because I think both Purge and New Predators could have used a bit of each other this year. They could have.
I loved it.
I wouldn't say I loved it, but I thought, I don't understand that. I think it's a totally fun movie.
Yeah, that was
it. I enjoyed it.
I think it's a pretty solid Shane Black movie, and it's a pretty fun Predator movie. At no point does it ever become a great movie, but, like, I would watch The Losers. Is that what they were called?
Yeah,
the Loonies.
Yeah, the Loonies.
I would watch a movie about the Loonies any day of the week with that cast. They're fantastic. Their timing's brilliant. It's just like, as a whole, I guess it's somewhat colored by hearing so much. Like, oh, this was interfered. I didn't really notice that much except for, like, in the editing.
Oh, I noticed.
Yeah, I noticed in the last editing.
Act, so the last
like,
act.
It's was a mess of a movie.
No, there were moments where I was suddenly like, where the fuck did they get a camper from? When they just pull up in a camper, I'm like, I don't remember that being there. So there's definitely some editing issues. That said, it felt like Dream Team. Do you guys remember that Michael Keaton movie?
Oh, I love that movie. Yeah.
Dream Team as the Predator movie. And it's fucking fun. And I loved how small the scope was because usually Predator films are like world domination, we're saving the world. And this one was about a little boy going trick-or-treating who finds a Predator mask. It was just, and these, like, the Loonies then have to go kind of, you know, save the day. It felt such a smaller scope compared to most Predator films, but I love that it was fun. It was still grandiose. The gore was over the top. It still had all of the things that I like about Predator movies. And it was really self-aware as well, where it was like, you are one ugly, and, you know, they were nodding at some of the lines and even making fun of Schwarzenegger at moments.
Well, do we know? I mean, I haven't researched enough to know what actually happened behind the scenes.
I did quite a bit.
Okay, so what happened to this movie?
Well, I don't know. I mean, all right, first of all, let me preface this. So obviously, there's a lot of controversy on this movie because of Olivia Munn speaking out about one of the actors in it who had a tiny role in it, but apparently he was a sex offender. They were not led to believe that. They didn't know he was.
Mm. But he's been in every Shane Black movie.
He was a sex offender of children. So he was registered. You could find him on the website. Shane Black knew this. Mm. Other people apparently knew this. And he was hired, you know, and Olivia Munn rightfully just spoke out and said, I share a scene with it. I don't want it in the movie. She went to Fox, and Fox said, okay, we'll take it out.
Yeah, but because of because these are sensitive times, because of the speed in which various people responded to it, it almost became like a problem, or she felt like she was being kind of
isolated. She was the only one doing press up in TIFF. No one else
went up there. Yeah. And so that's kind of a bummer because that's the stigma before this movie. Mm. But by the way, I totally agree with her. It should have been addressed before they even made the movie. And I'm glad that they at least caught it before it came out. It would have been much worse if it was in there or whatever. That said, whatever the scene was totally her introduction, because when she comes into the movie, it's just so out of left field. And you're like, what? All right. Going along with it.
Not as left field as somebody who exits the movie. I mean, I've never seen anything in my entire life watching
movies. Oh, yeah. There is
major character who just is suddenly done in a movie where you're like, wow.
Like, it took me a minute to be like, was that
gone?
Did that character leave the movie all of a sudden? Or, I don't know. I can't even tell.
That was the moment where I was like, whoa, something happened there.
But, yeah, I think they completely reshot the third act.
Which is the weakest act by far.
The third act is all over the place.
I had a lot of fun all the way up until then.
Yeah, there's fun stuff in there, and they do some goofy shit. But, you know, like.
Did he shoot?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think he reshot and fixed it and changed the ending and all that stuff. But the thing is, the fun bits that are still there, like I love the stuff with Keegan and Thomas Jane. Like, they have this great bond and friendship, and so
I like all the characters are fun.
The characters really work, but it's just they're in a slightly messy movie, which feels like studio is like, we want you to do this now or that there, and also I don't really need explanations or. Genetic tampering or whatever, however they want to go into that. It's just a creature from space that hunts people. I don't really need more than that.
But there's some pretty cool actual Predator stuff. Like, the actual Predators themselves are pretty cool in it. So.
Yeah, so I liked it overall, but I recognize it is not a perfect movie, like the first one is.
But none of the others are perfect after.
None of them.
Would take this over an AVP film. Any
100%.
Because it has a sense of humor. They take themselves too seriously. Yeah. That's the problem.
It's still so fun,
Yeah, it's no Predator Purge. And that's, I think, what we're getting at, Brian. So make it happen.
Is it Predator 2?
No.
Predator 2 is awesome.
I like Predator 2, but I also
more consistent.
I haven't seen it in like 12 years, and everyone's like, you should rewatch it. And I was like, I don't know if you're going to change my love of Predator 2.
Yeah.
No, this would be my third favorite among them, I think. Because I don't remember Predators.
Predators. Predator is pretty well made.
Predators is well made.
Nimrod Atoll?
But wasn't it basically a remake of the first one?
It was, but on their planet.
Yeah.
On their
planet. I watched that, actually. I watched it when we were at Texas Frightmare, the night that I wasn't going to go out, and then you guys texted me and were like, we're at the party, and I was eating an entire bag of sour cream and onion chips in my hotel room bed, and then you guys were at the party. I had just watched Predators when I came down while eating an entire bag of sour cream and onion chips.
That's a good background story.
Isn't it?
I'm glad we got that coloring to know what
it's important to know that I was eating an entire bag of sour cream and onion chips.
These are the details our listeners come for.
Yeah. I know, they do. But it actually, I really enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy Predators the first time I saw it, but watching it at Texas Frightmare, maybe it was the chips, but I had fun with it.
I'm
going to
go on a Predator
it moved.
Marathon.
That's the thing I remember. It kind of moved and had a good pace to it. Good cast again.
Some good twists and turns.
I'll tell you what, I'm still thinking like Mandy lingered for me. And I'll tell you, the thing I think about most isn't actually either of the two leads. It really is Mandy. Like that actress, there's something so haunted about the character she's playing. Like afterwards, I still like her eyes. And then I didn't realize she's the actress from Crocodile from the Black Mirror episode.
Yeah,
and once I saw
she was in Oblivion with Tom Cruise.
Yeah, she's pretty unrecognizable.
Different. That kind of got me excited. But she's really kind of the quiet hero of that movie. Like, there's just something really about her presence in that film. And it's not really horror, but after seeing it on the heels of Mandy, I saw First Reformed, the new Paul Schrader film that's getting all the kind of award buzz.
See that.
It's a very minimal movie, so I think it won't be for all types. But it's really emotional horror. Like, it's definitely horror in a sense. Like, it's a pretty painful watch. Ethan Hawke's utterly terrific. He'll definitely be an award season contender. It goes to a really interesting place, that film. But after it ended, I was like, oh, it's literally Mandy. It's the same movie, same character, but like one is this beautifully made, crazy, stylistic movie, and the other one's the total opposite, total restraint, almost nothing showy, but they're both these tortured characters about loss. So it was just kind of fun to see them back to back. Unfortunately, no Cheddar Goblin in First Reformed, which would have made it even better. But it's interesting. Yeah,
the Mandy girl, and I mean, this is IMDb, so who the hell knows, but the Mandy girl is slated to be in Brandon Cronenberg's new movie Possessor.
Oh, cool.
Which I've heard good stuff about. Cool. Who knows if that's true or not, but looks good.
So that's those two.
Yeah. First off, I went to the Disney Halloween, which was fun. I always love going to Disney at Halloween, but the cool thing that they did is they changed over the Haunted Mansion to the Nightmare Before Christmas Mansion, which is a lot of fun. Hour and 30-minute ride or wait time. That one's a bit intense, but it was a good one, so I had fun with that. And then because I've been prepping for the Miskatonic Aquatic Horror Lecture, I've been watching aquatic horror films I've never seen before, and I happened upon 1965's Sting of Death, which is by Herschel Gordon Lewis.
What?
Yeah, exactly.
Weird. I've never heard
that. That's why I watched it. So Herschel Gordon Lewis wrote a killer jellyfish movie in 1965. This is 2 years after Blood Feast. And it's directed by, I'm going to say his last name wrong, William Greffey.
He did a bunch of low-budget exploitation. I Eat Your Skin was in there. He did Mako Jaws of Death and a whole bunch of stuff like that. This one.
Do you think he's a real guy, or do you think he's somebody we know with an alias?
That's a good question. No, I actually think he's a real guy because he has a lot of movies.
Born in Miami.
Born in Miami.
This was
shot in Miami. So no, this one is about a college girl who goes to visit her dad on an island. He's a marine biologist, and while she's there, people start dying. This creepy scientist assistant named Egon keeps flirting with her, and then it turns into
Egon.
I know, subtle. Wow. Then it turns into Hiss, but instead of making a giant snake man, they're making giant jellyfish men.
How do the jellyfish look?
Oh my god, so that's the fun part. So this was put out by Something Weird, will give you kind of the caliber. It's a double feature for Something Weird on with Death Curse of Tartu, which I've never seen. But I pulled this up just so that you guys could see the grade of the jellyfish in this movie. Because they're legit. It is pretty much a man in a green suit with what I swore was a Mylar balloon on his head.
That's no Tony Gardner.
No,
I think
that
blob is a little more effective.
No, this there is a brilliant midnight showing of this somewhere where you can sit and laugh at the screen. Otherwise, this was a bit rough to get through in the privacy of my own living room.
But I like how diligent you're being.
I know. But I had to cover it because as soon as you say Herschel Gordon Lewis wrote a jellyfish movie, I'm like, okay, I'm fucking there. So that's Sting of Death, which you can still find on DVD through Something Weird.
Sting of Death.
I think he looks awesome, the Sting dude. He actually looks
a little bit like Mysterio.
He's got a Mysterio look to him.
I'd run up to him with a giant fat like marker and just draw a happy face on it.
See, I would just be like, I could take scissors and pop your bubble, and we're done. Sharp nail, and we're good. So yeah, but it's definitely this would be a good screening for you and Josh Miller.
Okay,
that type of movie.
I'm on it.
It's off brand.
Yeah.
Off-brand for those two.
Yeah.
Really quick, I just want to talk about two TIFF titles that made their debut.
What is TIFF for the layman?
Toronto International Film Festival.
There you go.
Thank you, Ulrich. The first one I saw was Peter Strickland's In Fabric.
Okay, that's one of the ones I'm most looking forward to. Because his last movie was just incredible. But.
Yeah, and he also did, that was the Duke of Burgundy.
Duke of Burgundy,
about.
Just aesthetically.
Then he did Barbarian Sound Studio, which I've not.
Yeah, that should be our favorite.
I love that movie.
I know.
And then the one before it, which is the Rape Revenge film set in Transylvania, is fucking amazing. The name just escaped me, but on the Pure Cinema Revenge episode I did, it's his first film. It's fantastic.
Really?
It really sets the bar high. My God, what is this guy going
to
do?
Yeah. I'm happy to report that In Fabric is fantastic, and you're going to love it.
I can't wait.
We'll talk about it more when it comes along, but it got picked up by A24.
Cool.
From a bird's eye view, this story is basically about a haunted dress and how it passes from owner to owner, kind of destroying their lives as it goes. On a granular level, thematically, it's about consumerism and obsession and beauty, and it's all done in that kind of sumptuous Strickland style with beautiful production design and wardrobe and just very warm visuals and great performances and the score. It's weird because I looked it up on IMDb and there's nobody credited for the score, and it is fantastic. Like, I literally wanted to go back and watch very key scenes that have this very lyrical, beautiful score. I don't know. Maybe they probably just didn't flush out the IMDb. The story itself, predominantly actress, it's Marianne Jean Baptiste. Mm. She's done a bunch of stuff. Yeah. She was on Homeland. She carries much of the emotional weight of the film, playing a single mom who's looking to get back into the dating scene. Keep in mind, most of it looks like it was set in the 60s and 70s. So
like
it's just like
films.
Yeah. And she's got a son who lives at home, and she's getting out back into the dating scene. She writes into a newspaper the single section and fields various dates, and she buys this dress from this this clothing store, and the clothing store is run by these very weird, sinister individuals who wear nothing but black clothing. They look like, I don't know, just rich weird aristocrats, but they're great salesmen. They're great saleswomen, and they sell her on this dress, and she tries on the dress for one date. Date goes horribly awry. The next morning she wakes up, she's got this really weird rash on her chest, and her life just starts to take a downward spiral, and she tries to return the dress, but they won't take it back. And then when she tries, she just throws the dress in the closet, and like one night she wakes up and the dress is hovering over her bed.
Oh, cool.
So there's some cool, really cool visuals. And then we occasionally dip back into the clothing store and get to know some of the employees there, and they have very peculiar rituals that they do with mannequins and other clothes.
Yeah, when I saw the still for this, I thought of Tourist Trap. I was like, instantly, I just saw still and yeah. I was like, oh, Tourist Trap.
Well, it's shot in yeah, a very one, yeah. Oh, that's a great shot.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, the
don't tell us too much more plot.
No. That's about as far as I got to go, but you know, photographically speaking, yeah. It's very fetishistic when it comes to mannequins and the dress itself and the fabric and all that stuff. It's just a really cool, bizarro, weird movie, and it doesn't give you a whole lot of answers. And it's got that very deliberate Strickland pace. If you like his other films, you're definitely going to love this one. Yeah. If you're the casual horror movie goer, I still suggest you check it out. You might walk away a little disappointed because, you know, it's not your typical horror film whatsoever. It's just a really great
art
piece.
He's definitely channeling a little bit of Sergio Martino Argento aesthetically. Like more so.
Oh, no, Giallo stuff is all over the place. Yeah,
That's very interesting.
And really quick, I'll just talk about Necrotronic. Necrotronic
before
is
before we
dark,
move on, the movie we're trying to remember is Caitlin Varga.
Yeah, Caitlin Varga. It's really terrific. Like, and especially because there haven't been many big British directors in the last, like, you know, besides like Wheatley, you know, and who have burst through. And he just
Wheatley's a producer on In Fabric.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And then really quick, and I got to zip back.
Actually,
over
Strickland was
seconds.
A film critic before. He was a film critic before.
Yes.
Before he made it.
Yeah. That was a TIFF entry starring Monica Bellucci. Necrotronic came from the directors of Wormwood. I don't know if you ever saw Wormwood.
Which really that was
really
the Hammer
crazy.
Movie, right?
No.
Errol Morris's
Worm W Y R M Wood.
Oh,
about a year or two ago.
About a year or two ago. Wakewood
yeah,
was
Wakewood,
the Hammer
yeah.
film.
I like that one.
Wormwood was post-apocalyptic, weird
zombies.
We're not talking about Errol Morris, basically.
No, we're not talking about.
All right, let's just be clear.
This one is basically about a.
We have too much knowledge.
You guys, yeah, I know. Yeah, it's hard to get in.
That was a lot
in there.
Going on right there.
Wow.
But this one stars Monica Bellucci. I'm going to tell it to you really quick because I know I'm losing you.
AKA most gorgeous woman on earth, right? Monica Bellucci still has to be,
oh my
basically.
God. Elric, you're killing me.
All right. Continue.
You're never
give me
going
five
to get
seconds
this
to get, to get through this.
Wait, what did you want to say?
All right. I'll be back. I got to go introduce
he
something.
Literally does have to go introduce something.
He'll be back.
Well, he goes to...
Here's my thoughts on Necrotronic.
So Monica Bellucci...
She was married to the guy from Irreversible. Well, they're both from Irreversible.
Yeah.
But I think that
what
might
a,
be everything.
What a couple movie.
I know,
do.
What a weird movie to meet over and fall in love. But, you know, what can you do?
You know what I'll mention? Elric, you could tell me, you may have spoken about this at some point, but I just watched Bushwick. Which
you mean the Brooklyn survival thing? You know what? I never watched it. I remember hearing about it at South By.
Yeah.
And then it's on Netflix. I recently
got the Blu-ray. I think because it's one of the RLJ releases. Our good friend Mark Ward hooked me up with it. And, I put it off for a little while, even though I love Dave Bautista, who's the lead star of it, and more so because of how outspoken he's been over the James Gunn thing. I just like him as a, there's something about him I just watched the new Blade Runner and I think he's really great in that too. But it stars Dave Bautista and Brittany Snow, and it's really interesting. It's directed by the guys that did Cooties. And now Cooties is an over-the-top kind of horror comedy. Jonathan Milliot and Carrie Mernion. But it was written by Graham Resnick and Nick D'Amici.
Yeah.
And, you know, those are like Glass Eye guys. They did, Nick D'Amici does all the stuff with Jim Mickle.
Stakeland
and stuff like that. So when I saw their screenwriting credit, I was like, why didn't I watch this sooner? Yeah. Like, had I known? And it's really interesting. It was just interesting. It's basically... Brittany Snow is coming home to Brooklyn to visit her grandmother in the opening sequence. She's in the subway with her boyfriend. And basically, the lights kind of start to go out and come back on in the subway. As soon as they come up to the surface, basically all hell is broken loose over the course of this train ride. But it's not zombies or anything. Somebody, some elite force, it's almost like Red Dawn style where somebody has literally come in and is just shooting and fighting people. And then obviously there's people on the streets of Bushwick that have weapons back. So it's basically all out anarchy and like, you know, kind of people just fending for themselves. And Brittany Snow is the lead character, Lucy, and she stumbles upon Stoop, who is Dave Bautista, and basically they're trying to navigate to her grandmother's house and pick up her sister and basically try to figure out what the hell is going on and how to get out of there. Because obviously some war zone has happened and you don't need know, you know, you hear more about it as the movie goes on. But what's interesting about it also is it's pretty much in real time. So it's not edited like a traditional movie. Like, you are with them on the train, and then everything happens. So it's almost like
in media res, you're dropped in the middle.
It's like the opening. Happening. Yeah, it's like the opening scene of a zombie movie when shit goes down, but it's not zombies, where you're in the middle of it trying to figure out in real time what you would do. And so, you know, it's not anything. I just thought it was really interesting.
Doesn't it have something to do with 9/11? Because that's why I didn't watch it, because I was like, that sounds heavy.
No, there's a slight connection.
Okay.
But I mean, you can't not reference, if something terrible, something like this is happening in New York, you can't reference.
Have to talk about
so
it.
One of the characters may have been a survivor of that.
Oh,
and that's why.
All. For but some reason, I thought that there was like a much stronger through line with that. And I was like, that doesn't sound like something I would enjoy, but
not at all. And it's an interesting technical experiment, but more than anything, I just thought, God, it was scary how relevant possible it is right now with all that's going on. But it was interesting, and you know, again, Cootie's got a lot of attention, and I haven't heard a lot about this one.
No, this one played at the festival, and it got on my radar, and then I didn't hear about it.
I would check it out. I think you would appreciate.
I like Resnick,
the filmmaking
about
it. Yeah. So Bushwick, check that one out.
Okay.
All right. Well, Ryan, I guess will join us after.
Well, okay.
What else have you seen before we grab our guests?
I watched Haunters, the documentary, which we'll get into more in a second. But
Ryan's back.
But I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Hey, Ryan, tell us about Monica of
Bellucci.
No, we moved on.
No, we haven't.
We've been talking about Necromantic.
We were on Necromantic.
I tried to cover you for Necromantic or
Necronomic.
Erotic, yeah.
That's the one.
I don't know. What were you guys talking about?
We're just talking about Monica Bellucci. Just general?
Yeah.
You know,
well,
general.
I mean, like, this is definitely not the movie to, you know, talk about Monica Bellucci.
Have you seen Milena? She's really good in that.
Wait, okay, all right.
What was that? Giuseppe Tornatore's film.
Is there anything else?
We were talking about Wormwood, the guys who made Wormwood.
No, but is it good?
Actually, you're about to tell us.
No, it's not good.
Oh, it's not good. See, why are we talking about
it? That's exactly my point, but if you let me get through that.
There's the punchline.
There is. All right, here's the one thing I will talk about, if you guys give me a second.
Yeah, all right.
Today is Fantastic Fest. By the time you listen to it, we're about the second day in. There's a fantastic film that you guys need to pay attention to. It's called... You Might Be the Killer, from director Brett Simmons.
Oh.
He did Husk, which was the After Dark original film, Scarecrow thing. Came out a few years ago. He did a sci-fi original movie called Animal. This one stars Fran Kranz from Cabin in the Woods, Allison Hannigan from How I Met Your Mother. And basically, it's a mix of The Mask, with Jim Carrey, meets Friday the 13th. Okay. And basically, Frank Kranz plays
which is the original Mask, the comic book of the Mask.
Well, that's why people don't associate the Mask with the comic book, unfortunately. But basically, it is Frank Kranz plays a camp counselor at a summer camp who were basically into the end of a slasher movie where all of his fellow counselors, save for two, are dead, and he's on the run from a masked killer, and he calls Allison Hannigan, who is his best friend and a slasher movie fanatic and knows all the rules and tropes, and basically talks with her about how to get out of this situation. And we kind of backtrack into how he got into that. Hmm. And there are a lot of fun surprises, a lot of fun tropes that are turned on her head. And the movie actually has its own theme song at the end too, which is kind of cool. But it debuts at Fantastic Fest this weekend, and it's pretty stellar. It's
called
really
You Might Be the Killer.
You Might Be the Killer.
Love it.
Yeah.
But the bonkers one I have to mention before we go on is a new film by Arrow. That's one that Becca likes a lot. So this is a movie where if you're sitting at home watching Valerie and Her Week of Wonders, and as it wraps up, you're like, man, this just isn't weird enough for me, then this movie is the one for you, because I thought I was weird loving Valerie.
I love what's it called?
This
movie's
so fucking weird. This is Horrors of Malformed Men by Ishii. This has to be one of the strangest movies I've ever seen, and I've seen a lot of strange fucking movies.
It's so fun.
The entire time I was going, what kind of movie is this? this. It's like a mixture of so many genres, but it's really interesting. If this is your jam, like totally bizarro cinema, this is, it's getting a beautiful.
This is called Valerie and her
That's a different
no,
word.
No, no, Valerie.
Saying, what are you talking about?
Valerie saying, on the Stairs?
Watch that and thought it wasn't weird enough because that's a weird fucking movie.
Okay.
Then this is the movie for you.
What's this movie called?
This is called Horrors of Malformed Men.
Oh, Japanese okay, okay. Got it.
So even though that it's too. Weird, there's a lot of layers to this because I remember I watched this in college like a long time ago when I was doing a paper on reflections of the atomic bomb in cinema. Uh-huh. And so even though that is this fucking bonkers movie about this woman who goes to this island and there's like...
But the dude. No, dude goes to the island.
Yeah, but there's like weird stuff, like malformed people on it. And there is a woman. It's been a couple
years since
I've
seen it. There's a woman on the island,
But yeah, it's obviously kind of a allegory for Hiroshima. So even though that it's
through
fucking
many,
bonkers.
Through many layers of strange rapey creations and weird genetic alteration. It's a little, Dr. Moreau. There's a bit of Moreau. But it's basically, I mean, I've never once in my life had to write down the synopsis of a movie for the show where I cut and paste from IMDb just because I knew coming on. It's like, I wouldn't even remember what the fuck happened. A guy escapes an insane asylum. He's a medical student. He then sees that some guy has recently passed away who looks exactly like him and is exactly like him. So he adopts his personality of a rich family, and then he finds out that that guy's father is on a mysterious island where he's creating some sort of special island, so he's like, I gotta get in on that. Goes to the island and then discovers that he's got this island of weird genetically altered people. Some people are sewn together, twins, and their plan, the malformed men, is like, oh, we're gonna all get together because we're all freakish men, and then we're gonna get all the pretty women. That was like the whole plan. But it is a deeply strange movie. I was just watching it last night going, man, I mean, I love that about movies, like, just when you think you've seen the strangest thing you could imagine, it's like there's another movie out there. Always. There always is. Yeah. The ending gets quite generic, ironically. Kind of gets all tied up really cleanly by a detective character. But the one thing I will say that's cool about this, it's written by, and I always love telling people about this movie, Edogawa Rampo is basically the Japanese Edgar Allan Poe. He kind of took that a pen name in the 60s, I think, and wrote a lot of stuff. And there's a movie about him that's very Lynchian that I always try to push onto people. It's one of my favorite things I've ever discovered, called The Mystery of Rampo, and it got no release in America.
Yeah.
I talked about it on Pure Cinema a lot.
That.
And it's
and
a magic.
Movie, I think,
yeah, and I much prefer that to this, but they're kind of worked nicely together because this is one of that guy's stories.
Now, have you seen Rampo Noir?
I haven't seen Rampo Noir. I've heard of that one.
Yeah, it's good.
But it's also about him?
It's his stories. It's been a couple of years. I'm Googling it now to make sure. Yeah, Rampo Noir 2005. It's been a while since I've seen it. But it's an anthology movie that's like multiple short stories from him.
Cool.
And it's really cool as well.
So, you know, if you like the weird, this is it. Arrow is giving
Horrors
it to you.
Horrors of Reformed Men.
Horrors of Malformed Men.
Malformed.
They are not reformed. They are malformed.
They're malformed.
They're anything but reformed.
All righty.
Well, let's keep getting weird.
We are going to keep getting
weird. Let's get weird.
Extreme.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited. Get the dog food ready.
We live in fear. Fear of failure, commitment, each other, and the beyond. It's one of the few things that unites us all. Salem, Massachusetts knows this more than most, which is why Salem Horror Fest will return in October to explore societal themes of fear and anxiety in the Halloween capital of the world. Prepare yourself for 2 weeks of terror with screenings, panels, podcasts, special guests, parties, premieres, and more in the haunted and historic Witch City. Raise Hell with Linnea Quigley and George C. Romero. Conjure Demons with the Faculty of Horror. And Repent before the latest film from Darren Lynn Bousman. Behold Wolfman's Nards with the Monster Squad's Andre Gower, and relive your kinder trauma for the New England premiere of Scary Stories documentary. I will be presenting the opening night keynote speech on October 4th, followed by the 30th anniversary celebration of Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, with Cassandra Peterson, and that will be followed by a screening of our new Halloween film. Tickets and weekend passes are available now. To overcome fear, we must first understand it. SalemHorror.com.
Tonight's episode of Shockwaves was also brought to you by Fright Rags. Fright Rags is the number one source for horror t-shirts, with specially curated collections created by renowned horror artists. They offer the best art and the best quality anywhere. Recently released, the Teen Wolf collection is now available, featuring all new shirts and enamel pins, as well as exclusive shirts and enamel pins for the documentary Haunters, The Art of the Scare, which is now streaming on Netflix. They also have the new Stephen King birthday line and The Predator. So head to www.fightrags.com
www.fright-rags.com now. You can enter code SUMMERSHOCK10 at checkout to get 10% off your entire order. Again, that's SUMMERSHOCK10 at checkout. So head to www.fright-rags.com now.
Yeah. Welcome back. We are with our special guest, John Schnitzer. How are you, sir?
Hey, how's it going? I'm excited. I'm excited to be here.
You're a listener.
Yes, I am.
You are the director of Haunters, The Art of the Scare.
Yes.
Which is now on Netflix.
Yes.
And I watched it last night.
Yeah, last night on Netflix.
Well,
we talked about it a while ago, but since you just watched it, Elric, why don't you give us your initial thoughts and review?
It's funny because me and Josh Forbes got obsessed, you know, just with some of these like local immersive theater things. And about a year ago,
you did Tension, didn't you?
Yeah, we did Tension. After Tension. Before that, I hadn't done anything like that. And I became obsessed with the McKinney Manor. So we became obsessed. I was like, well, we got to make a documentary on that guy. We got to go down there. And of course, then I find now that everything I ever wanted to know and probably didn't want to put myself through is answered in this film. And that's where your film, because I'd seen Spookers, I think that's sometimes the problem with when two things come out that seemingly could be similar. And I'd seen the New Zealand documentary Spookers, I think that's what it's called, before yours. And then I met you outside a movie theater and we just talked. Probably in my mind, I'm like, oh, it's probably just more stuff about people who
scare people. What's the other one from the kid from Troll 2 who did Best Worst
Movie? Yeah, American Scream.
Yeah, beautiful.
American Scream.
But that one's about home haunts.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more homespun.
But what I love about yours is, A, you're starting to talk about people who do the home haunts, and then you, like great documentaries do, is when you stumble upon a character who is so interesting, you have to follow the character. Mm-hmm. That's what a documentary should be. It can't be like, oh, no, but I'm sticking to this topic. It's like, no, fuck your topic. You just discovered something that you need to find out more about. And so it ends up being this guy, Russ, a big part of it, not the whole thing, because you contrast him. And for me, that's probably why makes the film transcend a bit, because you know, even when it ends, you're not going to get these kind of answers, but you're like, what drives people? Like,
and I think
who is this person? Because he's very interesting.
Yeah. We should explain that basically the other docs we mentioned are haunts and mazes and things like that, or homegrown things. But John's film stumbles into extreme haunts. But not all of them,
because some of them are the homegrown guys.
Some of them are homegrown. Well, most, I guess, technically they're homegrown. But the point being, a lot of people actually don't, and I know this with our film Extremity, a lot of people don't know what an extreme haunt is. Like you say, oh, it's extreme haunt, and they think, oh, like the Universal Horror Nights or whatever. No. We're talking like Blackout. And obviously McKinney Manor and stuff like that. So,
Physical or psychological being pushed
to your limits. Start by telling us what this is, because, I did Blackout once and was like, this isn't for me. And so I know very little past that.
Yeah, I knew Blackout wasn't going to be for me once I heard they yell at you and make you run around.
That's when I was done. I don't do yelling and running.
Yeah, I didn't join a frat. I know,
Ryan licked a nipple, I think. It was a big Blackout.
I've done Blackout three times.
Three times.
What?
It's
lick that nipple.
Well, one thing I wanted to show.
Someone's going to lick it.
In his defense, that was to get out.
that's an interesting safe word.
Yeah.
It takes a while to get out.
Yeah.
So the idea with extreme haunts, I mean, I grew up loving haunts. And my birthday is October 19th when Halloween comes out. I'm so excited on my birthday. And my birthday was basically everyone has to go to haunted houses with me. Even people who don't want – if you want to see me, this is the only thing we're going to be doing. So it was always fun to see friends of mine having meltdowns at Universal and not Scary Farm. And I was always surprised. Like, look at these crazy reactions from, you know, a guy in a – in a mask walking. I mean, I run and I scream and I freak out because I'm there to do it. I'm there to have so much fun, you know. There's that whole thing about – there's a thing in the movie where there's a little kid, the kid wearing the Taco Bell hat. He's talking to my nephew. He's trying to convince my nephew to go through Donald's home haunt. My nephew's like, I can't do this. I'm not going in there. And the kid goes, look, when you go through that, you come out, you feel like a man. And what's funny is Char is talking – so Char, the legendary scare actor, she's talking about that when you do this, you get to feel like a kid again. And that's like this cool dual rites of passage that goes on with these haunts. It's like adults want to feel like kids again and feel carefree and freak out and scream and go crazy. And kids want to feel brave. Mm-hmm. And it's so fascinating that this is our one rites of passage, really, to this type of a thing. It's not a passive experience. You know, it's not watching a movie. It's not being in a theater. It's actually like, what will you do? What is your reaction going to be? So when I started seeing that haunts were getting more extreme, I was so fascinated because I was like, when did this start? Mm-hmm. When exactly? Because the first time someone told me, well, there's this place called Blackout. You know, naked people will waterboard you. I was like, what was that? what did you just say to me? And it's a haunted house? And my mind was kind of blown from there. And the more I kept looking at it, I'm like, wow, this is really the traditional mazes. There's the interactive immersive theater. And then there's this extreme haunts. And what's so fun about it is there's like 1,000 subgenres of horror. That's what I love about horror. Mm-hmm. And it's everything from supernatural to so-called torture porn to everything in between. Now there is a subgenre of haunt for every single subgenre of horror. And that is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And yeah.
But I was going to say the term extreme haunt. I mean, like, let's really break that down, because going to Blackout, I've gone into other experiences where you're tied up, you've got a plastic bag thrown over your head. That's not a haunt to me. That's an experience. So I almost challenge them to remove extreme haunt, like the haunt out of extreme haunt, and find something else. Because to me, and especially watching your documentary, it lifted the veil for me a little bit, because I was like, wait a second. Can we just bring the haunt back to haunted houses again and just like create a new lane for these extreme experiences, you know, like where you're going to get tied up and thrown in a coffin? Because to me, a haunt is you're going to go in, you've got a bunch of you're going to have a bunch of scares thrown at you. You're going to have spooks and goblins and demons and other stuff. To me, that's a haunted house, you know. And so it's very weird to me that they still continue to call them extreme haunts, because it's like, it's not really haunted. It's not, there's no, let's really get into that. So
I hear exactly what you mean.
We should come up, let's coin something else.
Well, you know,
I just looked up the definition of haunt, Ryan, while you were saying all that.
Oh, yes.
And just so you know, when it's used as a verb, it's of a ghost manifesting itself or a place regularly. As a noun, it's a place frequented by a specific person or a group of people.
Yeah.
Like my old haunt.
Like you're my old haunt. Yeah.
And so I think that's in the context. I get what you mean. Like when I hear haunts, I think of mazes where people jump out and stuff like that.
Sure.
When I hear of interactive experiences where people want me to put my hands or face in poo or whatever fucking happens at McCamey Manor.
I think Bousman did that, though, by calling it tension experience.
Yes, the tension experience.
It was never trying to be a lust experience.
That also makes it a year-round event, whereas some of these, and I think Blackout really started to branch out first, where, you know, it may have had its roots at Halloween time, but then it became something that they did year-round, that it was much more of like a session thing that, you know,
actually, Blackout started in the summertime, and it was because they were going to be kicked out of where their theater was.
Oh, wow.
They were way off Broadway for 20 years, and the rents kept getting raised on all these independent theater places, and they were always doing theater that was like Chekhov and Maeterlinck. You know you're a theater nerd if you're doing Maeterlinck. Hmm. And they were having people crawl around and go through these experiences to do the show, which was really interesting. Then they were like, you know what? We need to make some money. Why don't we do a haunted house in the summertime? We got there's not enough money for costumes. There's no costumes. There's no props. There's no sets. Blackout. It's going to be naked people, because what's more terrifying than someone who's not wearing a mask, but they're naked? So it's like, oh, that's real. What else are you going to do to me? And what they said that was so interesting, this is in the bonus features. I got the whole Blackout origin story in the bonus features. They said the second we started treating our audience like shit and said, no, you're going to see our show our way. Crawl through this and do this and do that. Mm. Once we started saying fuck you to the audience, we had a line around the block, which is a fascinating thought.
What was the year that they did the first one like that? Because I swear it was my last year in New York, because I remember getting a press invite at Fangoria and being like, I don't think this is for me.
2009.
That is the one. Yep.
Okay. So it's 2009. And that's why I was asking the Blackout guys, I was asking everybody, like, why did this start? How did this start? And no one really had an answer other than this is what we did. Mm-hmm. And I basically started looking at our little timeline of horror to find out what's going on with with Halloween, with horror, with these extreme experiences. And that's when I started noticing, oh, wow, Universal, all the classic Universal monster movies came out during the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
Then I start looking and going, when did Halloween make like the most amount of money at that time? Where we're just to date, when was it a juggernaut? It was 2001, which was so mind-blowing to me. Because mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, this is right after September 11th. Yeah. That was the biggest year for theme parks then, which then got beat out by 2008, mm-hmm. the financial meltdown.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is already really fascinating. Then we start looking at the war on terror. And then we start looking about when torture was on the news. And then, of course, Saw and Hostel. So these extreme experiences are reflecting the reflections in the horror film of the reflections of society anyway.
For sure. Yeah.
But I know what you mean by saying, why not just not call them a haunted house, just call them an experience?
They're sensory experiences.
I totally yeah. understand what you mean. I believe it's all under the same umbrella anyway.
Yeah.
You know, because when you hear haunted house, you know, or haunt, because most of them are just called haunt now. It's really rare that someone says the whole phrase. In my day, it was a haunted yeah. house. I actually got into a really heated debate with Ted Doherty, who wrote the haunt book mm-hmm. on Not Scared From. He said, look, a haunt is only something that's supernatural, and that's it. You know, it has to have a ghost to be a haunted house. And I said, well, that's interesting.
That's not even the origins of it, right?
Right. Well, that's the other thing, too. But
I mean, when the JCs, like, I know, I mean, they'd been doing them overseas, but when the JCs started them here, they weren't necessarily ghost-oriented.
They had everything. They yeah. had ghosts. They had surgery scenes.
Butchers.
They had all yeah. that stuff. So did, you know, Campus Life. They're the ones who really started that mm-hmm. stuff off, even before them. And that was all done through Youth for Christ. Yeah. Which is a real trip.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like my favorite maze at Not Scary Farm last year was the dark ride, which was no ghost, no supernatural. It is what a dark ride at a theme park is broken down. You're walking on the tracks, then you're walking through the break room. The animatronics are slowing down. Like, okay, and then there's people dressed as clowns coming after you. That was a perfect maze.
Yeah,
John Cook did that. And John Cook and Ted Doherty have teamed up to do Murder Co., that R-rated escape room, which is absolutely – have you done this yet?
No.
Awesome.
Where's it at?
Oh, you should do it. It's in Upland. It's fantastic.
Wow.
Where's Upland?
That's where Dave's parents live. It's like an hour east of here.
It's worth the drive. I'm going to tell you right now.
Look this up.
John Cook – so he does – my favorite maze is at Knott's Scary Farm. Like he did
for years he's been there.
Paranormal Incorporated, that's his. His version of zombie laser tag, which yeah. is
that's
you know
great fun.
I feel terrible calling it zombie laser tag right
that's
now.
That's what it is.
but he does it in such a way where it's so like your heart is beating. Like you feel like you're like under attack by these zombies. It's so you're in a video game. It felt like I was actually yeah. in Doom. It was so awesome. And what he did with Murder Co., it's called Black Market Escape Rooms. And what they did was he built these sets that are just so incredible. And it was like you're visiting something from like the movie Hostel. And you're a part of like this elite group that's going to watch people get tortured. And you're mm-hmm. choosing the person who's going to do it and the whole thing. And then all hell breaks loose. And you have to find a way out. And as you're looking for clues and trying to solve things, it's not like the normal escape room. Every clue pushes the story further. The suspense keeps.
Oh, that's cool.
I went with a bunch of friends and we were getting scared. And there's actors in that right, escape room. There's
Ryan, Ryan, love that stuff.
Ryan's like, I have to try that. I'm like, nope.
Nope.
You can not do for it. Me. It's I'm not, looking at the website right now.
You yeah. can do it. You
no,
can
no,
do
no.
It.
I'm not going to do it. But I don't find enjoyment out of these kind of things. So let me ask you, because
really?
you had mentioned that Blackout was not for you at the top of this conversation.
Wait,
so,
not for you, or did you do it?
No. Okay. And I'll tell you what, I would do it now. Because I got to know them.
Yeah.
And I really, once I got to know them, I really wanted to make it clear the big difference between Blackout and McCamey Manor. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of it's consent. That's a lot of it right there. A lot of it is also that they put themselves through their own experiences. I love that story in Haunters where Josh was saying that they try things out on each other without telling the other one they're about to do it. So they get the actual – because otherwise if you know what's going to happen, it's not how it works there. He's like – he's working late and all of a sudden the lights go out and he's like, okay, I guess something's going to happen. And then all of a sudden, you know, Christian Thor comes out, the co-creator of Blackout, comes out with a staple gun and starts stapling him on the chest. And he starts screaming, oh, no, oh, no. And he goes, and then he staples him on his hand. And he goes, oh, my God, that's even worse. That's even worse. It's fantastic. We're keeping this.
Wait, the staples are actually like going into
space. Well, it's not like this is not like a Sam Raimi movie. It's not like super powered staple gun.
Okay.
It's not like Darkman with a nail gun. It's like, you know, click, click.
Can we rewind for a second? Because you said something that I think is somewhat controversial. You said consent.
Yes.
Okay, so watching the documentary, no matter what people think of McCanny Manor, if the and there's a portion of the victims, in quote marks, people who went through McCanny who were disturbed and very frustrated and upset with how they were portrayed, and they watched the videotapes because he videos all those people. Now, I'm watching that, and if I'm in line for that for a year, and I've watched those videos, and I sign a release, I honestly do think that is consensual, because this thing's got a reputation for being the most fucked up thing on the planet. And if you want to throw yourself into that, you have to know what you're getting into. Now, so the controversial part for those not listening is there's no safe word. So there's no way to get out of this, unlike everything else, right? Tension, every other extreme thing.
Exactly.
Which is scary. Like, don't get me wrong. That's what will stop me from doing it. But if I knew all that and I signed away a waiver and I got him into that place, there's a part of me watching it that definitely was falling into the tough shit category. I mean, I'm not kidding. It might sound really cold, but I'm like, dude, this is not like some guy surprising you with what he does. Yeah.
I felt the same way at first.
Yeah.
You know, because I was like, come on. Not only are you looking at years worth, you're looking at hours and hours of
long
videos.
Waits, yeah.
You're Skyping with this guy for like sometimes a year. And every time he Skypes with him, he's like, you don't want to do this. You really don't. I'm not going to stop.
He's certainly not false advertising anything.
He's not. He's telling you.
He's telling you what he's going to do.
I'm going to do this to you. And I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. These things are going to happen to you. But I remember when the Evil Dead remake came out and they said the most terrifying film of all time. And it wasn't. It was a lot of fun. I had a great time.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
We're used to, as horror fans, being told this will fuck you up for life. And then it doesn't. You know, it's just a great time. So I think for a lot of fans that are horror fans that are going after this, they already have that in the back of their mind. And they're also in the back of their mind like, okay, well, those snakes were obviously fake. Those are rubber snakes. And this is like – there's some kind of a part of theater or play that's going on here. Plus, when you don't know what it smells like in there when you look at the videos.
Yeah.
You don't know what it feels like when these guys grab you. You don't know what it feels like when you get pinned against a steel wall and the wall is steel.
Yeah.
You know, it's
– But I see sheer terror. I mean, this is just from my perspective. On these videos, I see real terror.
I see exhaustion.
Yeah, I see exhaustion. I see terror. I see people pass their mental – so I do think there's a certain level of
– Yeah, but I'll say this much, Ryan. I thought the same thing. I look at this. I'm like, well, look, after hours and hours, you're going to get this glazed over look. A lot of those glazed over looks start at 10 minutes in. Because, and I'll tell you, oh God, it's so scary.
Did you do it?
No.
Okay. No, you got to sit in, though.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing.
So walk us through. I want to know how this, I want to know what a basic one is, because I will never fucking do it.
Because, yeah, McCamey has to be the most extreme, right? That's the one that probably hits the top of every list.
Is that the one? No, this is the
San Diego one.
That's San Diego.
That is the San Diego one.
That's the Jamie Man.
I'm reading
San
about
Diego
it.
One. It's free. You only have to donate dog food, but it could last as long as 8 hours.
And the guy's put so much of his own money into it.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
And the most shocking thing about your film is how incredibly likable and sweet he seems.
Now, what is his day job? Like, how did he make his money?
He seems like a sweetheart to me.
So he's not
disturbed. Maybe.
Look, one of his day jobs is that he's a wedding singer.
Yeah.
And he's a great wedding singer.
That's right.
Not just a good wedding singer. Like the people he performs at this all the weddings at this one ranch, everyone there was like, he's the best we've ever had. He's a giant teddy bear. We love him.
And he's a big scaredy cat.
He's terrified of snails.
Yeah, he couldn't
terrified.
Of snails?
I thought they were joking. Then one of the kids heard that I like couldn't believe it, and he picked up a snail and Russ goes, put it down. Put it down. And in the movie, you see it for a minute where he's chasing him. That went on for, I don't even know how long that went on for. Wow. I kept trying to get him to stop. It's like, look, you're employing a kid. how do you get a kid to stop? Anyway, he's chasing him with the snail. Russ is practically in tears with the snail.
He's the kind of documentary Herzog would have, like, you know, in the 70s, Herzog would have met this guy and made a documentary about him.
Oh, I would have
it's
loved
it. That kind of thing.
I would have loved Herzog's, like, voiceover.
Yeah.
And now Russ is having a meltdown from the
snail. Even the snails are screaming in agony.
Yeah. This went on for hours. The child would not stop.
But, like, so what's a little, well, but so being there, so what am I not seeing then? Because, like, I see the guy, I see people sign up. It doesn't mean I don't feel bad for them, because anyone broken psychologically is awful. But I just personally feel like the buyer beware. The buyer couldn't be more beware from what he's peddling, you know?
Look, yeah. Well, he asked me if I wanted to go through it. I'm like, no.
Well, no, his answer is amazing.
He tried to get me to go through it, too.
No, oh, but yeah. His answer, he's like, would you go through your own horn? He's going, hell no, I wouldn't.
That's, so wait, you know, I still want to be walked through it, because the stuff that I'm reading about on, you know, the website are things like covering you in fake blood, unwanted haircuts, and things like that. And
unwanted,
I'm like,
haircuts is a good way of putting
it. Haircuts. I'm like, though, I mean, that sucks. It does not sound like you would be physically and mentally broken within 10 minutes. So I'm curious.
Watch,
like,
this thing.
How does this work?
Or just the videos. Okay.
Yeah. Well, look, you can watch his videos. If you got, you know, 12 hours to spare, watch one of the videos. Because he cuts it together. I mean, his movies, they look like a Rob Zombie movie being projected on the Titanic while it's going down. It looks like – and he kept saying, I never watched a Rob Zombie movie. I'm like, okay. Well, number one, he makes everyone show up in a onesie. I'm like – this is just like House of a Thousand Corpses.
A onesie?
To me. Yes, like a Halloween onesie costume.
You have to I didn't know that part of it.
Yes.
I don't think that was in the film.
You see them wearing it?
Yeah, no, I was just wondering what the weird thing was.
Look.
Mario Kart or something, I guess.
Well, those. I'm immediately picturing like an infant onesie, and I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
like
the adults Halloween. Are wearing those kind of Halloween onesie costumes.
Like the pajama things.
Yes.
Okay.
Like that. But, you know, his real reason for doing that is because once they get drenched in water, it kind of weighs them down and it's hard for them to move around.
Dark.
So what happens is they have to wait. This is what happened. You have to wait on at a dead end road, and you're told you have to, like, so you make a little video saying that you're there. You have to show that the dog food is there, because the dog food goes to this greyhound rescue. And at the time I was filming, they had 12 greyhounds at that house. And they were all of them had health issues. And it was like, when another one goes on TV, he would call, he'd get it there. And before I tell you the walkthrough, this is the trip, though. Because I was like, God, I need to put this guy in my movie at least once. I got to figure out because, like, looking at this, I can't believe what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
You always hear there's this crazy experience, and it's always an urban legend. It's always bullshit. This is real. And he called me once at like midnight. He's like, hello, this is Russ. I'm like, nope, I don't even need that. I just need to talk to you. Let's have a conversation. He's like, this is how I talk. And I'm like, okay, yeah. I tell him what I want to do. He's telling me it's not going to happen. We go back and forth. And then I say, look, let me spend the weekend at your house. I want you to get to know me. He's like, you're inviting yourself over for the weekend? This is crazy. I'm like, okay, that's how he talks. And then I said, look, I'll come down. We'll film it. I'll bring a waiver that you sign afterwards if you feel like we're going in a direction that you want to – you feel like I'm not asking stupid questions. You feel like this is something you want to be a part of. And I spent the weekend at his house, and I'm in this one room, and they said, okay, well, this one dog tends to come into here. So if they do, here's a treat. Please give them some food. Yeah, that dog came in 2-3 in the morning. I'm feeding this dog. I hear Russ spoon feeding some other dogs in the other room. This is their routine. Mm-hmm. And so meanwhile, it was really dark in there. I'm like, God, it is really dark in here. I thought about it. I'm like, oh my God, that's right. The whole half of the house is covered by the haunt. So no light is coming in through that living room or the kitchen. It's like it's dark. So they have DJ lights going on all the time. It's a real trip. This is normal life. Okay. That's the normal day to day. So the actual – what happens? So you're told – and this is after you've seen all these videos. You've Skyped with him. You brought dog food. You're wearing a costume. You have to sit on this there's a dead end sign, and you're just looking – they said look away from the road. You have to look to where there's like a ditch or it's like a ravine or whatever. And then someone shows up and gives you a manila envelope, and it's the waiver. And the waiver is already crazy. Because you would just start reading the waiver and you're like, what the hell is this? You know, you might get stabbed. We can do this. We can do that. It's the first sentence is like, I'm not doing this. But before that guy shows up, everyone's so scared and they're getting so nervous. And I was filming them before they would get there, and they're just covered in sweat. And the two guys, the Mario Brother guys, they're Steve and Ryan, they're brothers, and they're a big part of the body modification community. So they've got all kinds of face tattoos, and they have all – now they're terrified. Their hands are – so they go, I don't know if I can do this. And you're waiting there. Like sometimes they're waiting for like an hour before someone shows up. And so you're already getting really scared. What was really funny is one time I was over there, and this kid – gets up on a little scooter, and he goes, "Are you guys here from McCamey Manor?" And they went, "Yeah, you're going to die." And then his mother went, "Quit telling people they're going to die." Yeah. I says, "I do it all the time." And he goes away. And I'm like, I couldn't get him to sign something. So then after waiting, they sign the waiver, and then all of a sudden this walkie-talkie comes out, and Russ is talking to them from this red van. Now, that is his wedding DJ van.
So he actually comes in the wedding DJ van to pick them up.
Yes, but the wedding DJ van is a scary looking van. This is like Jeepers Creepers kind of creepy van. This is not, you know. And he's across. So his car was parked in a high school lot, parking lot. And he's talking on a walkie talkie about what they're going to be doing. Now they're putting on kind of blindfold goggles, and they had to put on these kind of noise cancellation headphones. And so they're just waiting. Now they can't see. They can't really hear well. The van backs up. And next thing you know, someone's grabbing them. They're zip tying them. They're throwing in the back of the van. And the van just goes and goes and goes all around the neighborhood. And they're in the back while these guys are like yelling at them and grabbing them. And there's all these clothes and outfits hanging in the van too. So all these clothes are kind of falling on them while Russ is driving around and cranking up the music. And this goes on for a while. So now you're already shaken up. You don't know what's going on. Then he's on the walkie-talkie yelling, "Home base, home base, home base." And people are talking back. Now, these guys can't even see this part. The garage door starts opening, and smoke is just coming out of a normal garage door. And it's all so creepy. Then they're crawling in. And then they get into this room. And once they get in this room, then they take off the blindfolds. And they're in a very small, like 4x4 little room. The floor, the walls, the ceiling, it's all steel. And everything feels incredibly real at this point. And that's where he starts pointing out that camera there is Vegas. They're making bets on who's going to last the longest. Now, everybody online was like freaking out about this, going, "Oh, the people in Vegas, they should be ashamed of themselves, and we need them to stop this." And there are all these petitions to get this part of the haunt to stop. It's like, that's not a thing. He's made it up.
That's funny.
And I kept asking him, like, "Did you get this from the movie Rat Race?" And he was like, "Oh, yeah. I love Rat Race."
That's such a fun movie. Such a good movie. So there's a John Cleese in that.
John Cleese with the teeth.
Yeah.
I'm like, you are like a way more demented version of, like, you're like John Cleese meets Saw. Like, yeah. This is what you are. But what they start telling them the rules of what they're going to be doing. And then from then on out, you know, whether they're being duct taped or every room is different. And he has like so many of them. And every room, by the way, I even told him, like, dude, if you didn't have anyone grab anyone, if you didn't even hire an actor, if you just walked through there, it's fucking terrifying. I walked through there at 6 in the morning. Just filming some stuff, and I was like, "Oh my god, this is really scary." Because every room, the amount of detail to every room, and he has all these interesting things with the rooms too. Where like, if someone he thought about, like if someone's going to fight back, then he wants to be able to make a room bigger or smaller, so they can push the walls together. And it's like all of a sudden the walls are pushing out or they're pushing in. I'm in a room, they're in a different room. I'm filming something, and all the walls just caved in, but. You know, they didn't touch me. I'm like, oh my god, this is really, it's so scary. Just actually talking about this, my hands are sweating a little bit.
How much detail do people actually see through tears and sweat and
blindfolds? And blindfolds. Yeah. I even told Russ, you just had someone go through a room blindfolded that has like a $30,000 animatronic. That's amazing.
Wow.
You know, they see bits and pieces.
That's insane.
You know, he hired a kid in Texas that – his parents let him fly out. This kid, he's going to be like – one day this kid's going to be like the most incredible Imagineer of all time. He had him build these one-of-a-kind crazy devices. And this kid came up with this thing where these people, it's a chair that you sit in, but it looks like this crazy mechanical contraption with lights and everything. And above you, there's these giant sledgehammers. And it looks like it's all rigged together. You put on a gas mask that's connected to the machine. And then when they turn it on, the whole machine starts shaking and vibrating. The lights are going. The sound effects are going. And then it's this countdown. And then the sledgehammers swing down and stop just before touching your face.
Holy
but the
shit.
Second, when you're strapped in so you can't move, but the second it stops there, they have these hoses that blast fake blood. And it goes through the mask right up your nose. And it's so fast that your eyes like water because it's like getting punched in the face. And then they take the mask off and all this fake blood is pouring out of their nose. And I mean, and this kid, I was like, you made this? He's like, yeah, man, it took me a long time. I got a lot of this stuff at Home Depot. I'm just so proud. I'm
just like Jigsaw.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Little Jigsaw's out there.
There's a lot of, yeah, totally.
Okay, that's slightly more than unwanted haircuts. So
yeah.
Oh, the unwanted haircuts were very unwanted.
Well, and you have one of the best characters, I think, in anything I've seen in a long time, which is this neighbor. It's truly astounding. You have a neighbor who can see their house from her house, and she's the type of person who was like, this thing needs to be shut down. This is the worst thing ever. These people are just like terrible, blah, blah, blah. And then somehow he convinces her to do it. And she's the worst, most horrifying. I mean, she is the most scared of anyone who's ever gone through this thing. She looks like she's completely traumatized, and she keeps talking on camera about how this is still the worst thing. We need to shut them down. And he convinces her to do it again. And you're watching the film going, oh my fucking God. And
what?
This is where my interest in what the film and the world is, and why maybe my sympathy is a little less for the people who go through it, is because like who's the person who goes through that the second time? What is the wound? This is like in screenwriting terms, like what's that wound that person has that propels them to face this again after they already know he's going to fuck with you? And he puts her in a coffin. She's claustrophobic. And she says, as long as she doesn't shut the coffin shuts. You're like, oh my God. Like,
so, Ryan, you would never do this. Is this too much for you, McCamey?
I'll do McCamey if he does McCamey.
I almost feel like it's like almost annoying.
Yeah.
You know, I'd just be annoyed by the sledgehammer. Like, again, it boils down to, I mean, I'm a very old school. I grew up in a small town. I went to homegrown haunts. I moved out here. There was a lot of great homegrown haunts put on by former Disney Imagineers and stuff like that. And their stuff is beautiful and great and really spooky. And this is, I did blackout 3 times because I just wanted to, 1, see what it was like, 2, test the limits, 3, they did a Sundance edition. What's a Sundance blackout like? And you know, it's like I did that knowing, by the 3rd time around, I knew it was coming. And then it's not my kind of bag, but I do want to go back to something thematic, which is very interesting to me that you said earlier, which is now that you know Josh and those guys, you would do it.
Yes.
But you wouldn't do it you weren't going to do it because you did not know them. But now there's a safety net, a safety zone, a sense of comfortability because you actually know the people who are behind it.
Think of it this way. Like, I'll put it this way. Like when you think about a John Carpenter film, a Wes Craven film. When you think about Jordan Peele, when you think about filmmakers like this, when you go, okay, they might take me down some crazy path, Cronenberg, but you're in the hands of a master and someone who actually cares. They have to have because these are people that have to have empathy, right? That was one of the things that's the thing. If you don't have empathy, then what do you have? You just have someone just beating a corpse to death over and over again, and that's going to get boring after 5 minutes. But if you're watching a movie where that you have to – where there are characters you can feel for and an actual human storyline that you're going with also, and it scares you. I don't know. There's – to me, it's like you want to feel like you're in the hands of capable people who care about human beings because if people care –
but shouldn't you already have that inherently going into something where you have to sign a waiver and it's like
– I agree.
Corporate environment – like I mean like the first time I did Blackout, they were in an office complex on a floor that was no longer being used. And I was like – well, when I talked to myself about it like internally, I was like – well, this is completely safe, right? I mean, like they had to take a permit out for this space, and I went out going into that, going, yeah, it's got to be totally safe, right? And then they started pushing me around. I was like, oh, okay, I'm just going to get beat up a little bit, you know. Anyways, go on.
I hear what you're saying, but I still want to know that. I don't know. I just want to know that this is coming from a place where they want to mess me over. They want to scare the hell out of me, but at the same time, it's someone with a vision, and the vision isn't they just want to torture you. They want to put you through an experience. Like, anyway, it's like, okay, there's one haunt that I filmed, and I won't even say their name, but, you know, very well accepted. People really like them. The year I went there to film, they let the actors get drunk. Now, I was like, I even told them, like, dude, you really shouldn't have anybody drinking here. This is not. You shouldn't do this. No, no, no. They're getting into character. I'm like, they're not getting into character. These are people that are getting drunk.
It's dangerous,
And that was – and that culminated with one of the actors being – you know, they're supposed to be thrown to the ground. And this guy missed his mark. She hits the ground. She breaks her leg.
Oh, no.
She has to do a GoFundMe. For I basically was like, look, let me get you a lawyer. I know a great lawyer. This is – I was like, are you going to pay for this? They're not paying for it. She's like, I don't want to throw them under the bus. Like, they threw you to the ground. They were drunk. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, you're just like, you know, it's that's the kind of stuff that kills me, because it's like, look, 99% of these things are just awesome. And they're put on by people that are real entertainers. You got delusions put on by John Braver, who's like probably like the Spielberg of this. You know, he's giving you such a spectacle.
Yeah.
And you've got people like Zombie Joe.
Urban Death.
Urban Death. It's like
such like a labor of love, but it's so creative and beautifully composed. And every single time I see it, I'm like, oh my God, that was so new and I've never seen it before. And there was one of the Urban Deaths that I was in. All it was, it was pitch black. So I don't do the extreme haunts, but I do Urban Death every year.
Urban Death is so good.
Every single year. And one of them, all they did was just dim the lights, and it was the sound of like claws walking across the floor, like crab claws. And it was like for a good 4 minutes of just sitting there. And I don't even know how they did the sound. I think the actors were doing part of it as well, but you could hear it under your own seats. Like the sound, it rotated around the space, and then you could tell that the actors were moving with it. It was crazy.
Look, he's a master of space, because he has his place is like this room, and he uses most props here, from the 99 cent store, and he repurposes these little things that don't cost anything and creates art out of it. And it's really great. When you meet him, it's like, especially when he talks like, hey, John Haunters, VIP, what's up? I'm like, oh my God, he's such a funny guy, and he's so sweet. And then you see what he puts on, the lights go on, and you can't believe what you're looking at. Mm-hmm. And Urban Death is magic.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Have you guys done Urban Death before?
I haven't even heard of it.
Sierra has.
It was just at the Edinburgh Film Edinburgh Fringe Fest. Fringe Fest. And it's going to come back. You have to do it.
I'm sure they'll do it here around Halloween, won't they?
Of course. They've already announced.
But tension's a mixture of those. I was really impressed by Darren's thing. It really was, because where I do intersect a little bit, even if I want to not admit it to myself in those moments, doing his thing is... And I had this thing with delusion too, where when it starts to get real, that's when I found myself the most engaged, because the theatrical part, at a certain point, I start to become a little unengaged. Even though it's cool, I start going, yeah, this isn't real, or I'm safe, like what you were feeling. I'm in the back of a van, I'm fine. But when something happened, whether it was something with the sexuality or something, somebody did something to you that you're like, what's going to happen next? I found in those moments, I was very engaged, and I'd never had any experience like that in my life. I'm like, what's about to happen, or am I going to have to survive? So on that level, there is a little part of me that could understand why somebody might go into something like McCanny. I don't, you know, after watching that, I know I wouldn't. But so I get it. Like, you want to be put – it's almost like our entire lives are control. Like, we all are controlling ourselves. This is a chance to let go of control, but there's a really negative side to that.
You want to make sure you're letting go of control to somebody.
To the right person, not a
– You want to be in the right hands. Like
not a wedding singer.
Like, have you been the wedding industry just took a hit.
Adam's family.
But I'd say, like, have you been to the 17th door?
No, that's the one I've seen you tweeting about lately. What's this?
I love the 17th door. 17th door, I think, is a great mix of extreme, theatrical, interactive. It's really wild.
Is that one here in LA?
It's in Fullerton. It's in Orange County, but it's worth the drive. It's one of the most successful independent haunts that's out here. That's this extreme. And they have a massive line. Their actors are so incredible. Char... legendary scare actor, Char Mayer. So she's in my movie. She's my favorite monster. The first time I saw her perform in a show, she scared the shit out of me. She's so scary, and she's got such a great heart. So she trains their actors. So to me, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know that, you know, you got someone who's training them, making sure that, like, look, you have to feel a connection between the monster and the human. She's always talking about that. Actually, she just started doing scare schools with them. And I just filmed that because I was like, oh my God, I have to do this. I just took out my phone and filmed. So 17th Door last year was a prison theme. And they started off with this virtual reality bit that they strapped you into a metal chair and you put on the goggles and then you see this guy walk in Riot Cop gear in virtual reality. It's like really crappy virtual reality. And he walks up to you and goes, "Hello, welcome to your virtual reality experience." Mm-hmm. And then he takes out a cattle prod, points at your arm, and you get a shock. And he's like, "Oh no, what did I get myself into?" And then you're on a ride. It moves. And it's an awesome ride. Mm. And all kinds of crazy shit happens. And then when that was over, the door opens. Now the haunt starts. Now here's what's so cool about the haunt. So there's all these different doors. Door number one is red. You can't open it. The second it goes green, the door unlocks. And you go in and the door shuts and locks behind you. Whatever happens in that room is going to happen for a certain amount of time. And then the alarms go off and another door lights up and you go through the next door. Now, if a room is too much for you, you can use a safe word and they won't kick you out. You can just skip that room and go to the next one, which I love.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I did 17th Door a few times last year, and the second time I started skipping stuff. I'm like, okay, yeah, I did it. I did that. I don't need to be shocked. I don't need the cockroaches. Let's go to the next bit.
Are they real cockroaches?
I don't want to get into that. But what I will say is there's a lot of like – there was a time – I know this isn't being brought back, so I can just say this one. There was a time where you had to crawl through a tunnel, and I'm crawling through it, and the tunnel starts slowly filling up with water. I was like, okay, this is really, but you know what? You could do it. It's not that.
No, I can't.
It's all right. And they, but
no, it's not.
I'll tell you though, their Christmas show was so messed up.
That's the hell of a Christmas.
Their Christmas show, and I should have known better. Usually, when I go to an extreme haunt, what do? This is how you go to an extreme haunt. Garbage bags on the car seats. I bring a towel. I bring a Purell, a lot of water. And I wear clothes that I really don't care what happens to them. And shoes, too. You got to just – it's like going on Double Dare for adults. Mm-hmm. Only, you know, Mark Summers is, you know, evil. So I didn't think about how crazy the Christmas show was going to be. And, of course, you're there during Christmas time. It's like blackout during the off season. If you want this off season, we're going to do something to you. Well, that Christmas one, I was not prepared. That was just so messed up. And there was a part where I had to deliver – a baby out of the Virgin Mary who's smoking cigarettes. And I knew her too. It was Char's daughter. And it was like – and the amount of like lube that was pouring out of this barrel where you had to put your hand – it was so gross.
Jesus.
And that – but they do things at 17th Door with temperature, with effects, and they do things – this guy wasn't raised going to haunted houses. It's like not his thing. And he wanted to create something that was going to be – an original experience, an original attraction. He put his life savings into the first year. And now he's going to be there. I think they have like a 5-year lease. It's a real business. And there's this one thing that happened last year. I'm not even going to say because I know it's coming back. I was so surprised. And so John Murdy from Universal Studios, one of the head haunters over there, him and Chris Williams, John was like, "I get a night off. Which haunt should I do?" I said, "Do you want to go with me to 17th Door?" And he went, this one part that I'm not talking about, we both screamed and laughed. It instantly made you feel like a child. And I've never seen this at a haunt before. I've never seen it in an attraction before. And when you leave, you're just like in a daze because you can't believe. At times they made it feel dangerous. And at times you're laughing your ass off because it's very funny. And at times they had like even a glimpse of delusion, a little glimpse of like, oh, this is like a real theatrical moment.
Where is this one?
That's in Fullerton. I'm going to be there this weekend.
I kind of want to do that one. That
yeah, I wrote it down. I'll contact, see if we
good
can
luck, guys.
If we can visit.
I looked up the site. I saw a waiver. I'm like, nope.
Oh,
there's a waiver for any of them. I'm not
but
going.
You don't get hurt.
Well, look.
You could get hurt walking out
salesman.
Of the door.
Well, look. You know, it's one of those things. Look, you might get shocked. Little jolts of electricity here and there. Things like that. I mean, look, I when you get me to scream,
and
scream and laugh and kind of and then
that's the part that it's the laugh that's getting me interested. Like you saying, I screamed then I laughed.
Yeah.
That to me is like that's what we want from all these things, including the movies.
But did you see, scream is much higher pitched.
It's Evil Dead Ash number one where he screams.
Right.
Did you see that documentary on the tension experience that came out? Blackout documentary from about a year ago.
Yeah, the Blackout experiments. That director, we were in touch because we were overlapping every once in a while, and then. I was having some tech problems, and we were overlapping and filming Blackout. And then, it's different. He has Blackout at the end of the movie for 5 minutes. I had him had a longer interview with him, but he did a really interesting approach with that movie. I liked it a lot. And what was really interesting is when I was having a technical problem with all my hard drives, he sent me his assistant editor to help out.
Oh, that's cool.
Wow.
So nice.
But what I wanted to ask you about it is that what do you think – because now you've seen these people, including the neighbor, who I just think is a phenomenal character.
Grace.
What do you think and I'm forgetting his name. I think it's Russell, who has a podcast about extreme haunts and used to come to Jump Cut all the time. One of the nicest guys had his birthday party there.
Editor.
But he's in this thing, and it's I found it to be an incredibly sad documentary – because you basically found this group of people who were going back 5, 10, 15, 20, 50 times to the point where they're breaking into their house to be attacked. And I just found it kind of – I don't know if it's just not my bag, obviously, but it also kind of depressed me. And at a certain point, Blackout says, no, you can't come back anymore.
Right.
And this I think, speaks to the same kind of thing as McCanny. Like, what do you think from the people you're meeting that's coming from? Is there some sort of like just need to connect or to push ourselves past the point of control? Or what do you think that's going
to be? I thought I was going to see like one kind of person going to McCamey Manor.
Yeah.
I thought for sure we're going to find this one dude and they're all going to be different versions of this dude. And that just wasn't the case. Mm. There was a couple that was there for their honeymoon from London, you know. And yeah, that one.
Wow.
He proposed to her at Halloween Horror Nights, and he's like, he works in a cubicle all day. You know, he's this is what they're gonna do for fun. Mm-hmm. You know, I met people like Christina Buster, who flew in from Kuwait. She was the
interesting.
The one in the movie she's Skyping with Rush. The worst thing about Kuwait is that they don't celebrate Halloween here. I'm like, that's the worst. That's the worst about it. So she takes like a month or two off, and when she gets to do that, she just does Halloween stuff, and she does every extreme haunt. After that movie, I got a whole different story for you. If you want to hear something real crazy, I'll tell you. But I kept wondering what there were moms that were going through this. There were women in their 40s, women in their 20s. There were like, it was such a huge age range of people. And I kept looking at them like, what is going on? But what was such an interesting part of it though was I asked every single one of them, why are you doing this? And they all said the same exact, every one of them said, I want to learn something about myself. Hmm. And I was like, what? And some of them were like, I don't know. And some of them said they wanted to conquer their fears. And that's interesting. I mean, look, you've heard about exposure therapy. Mm-hmm. You've heard about these things. Although in exposure therapy, you're in control. You can stop at any moment.
It's like Primal Scream was a big thing. You know? It's a big expulsion of these fears. And I imagine a lot of people have had some sort of victimhood in their past. I bet if we saw true printouts on everyone's background, I bet a lot of people have come from other things or they want to see what that experience is like.
But I'm sure that some of them are just, you know, thrill seekers who just want to push themselves.
I'm sure it's
themselves.
Everyone. But,
look, well, you know, it's true. I mean, there's thrill seekers. There's people that have all kinds of backgrounds.
Yeah.
What was fascinating to me was watching when they were done going through the experience, and then they would say, I really want to work here. And this is someone who's just been screaming and get me out of here. I want this to stop.
And you're talking about McCanny right now.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is a positive.
I don't think that's a positive.
Oh, well,
yeah. So you want to work here. Because think of it. There's that one part. I don't know if you remember. I don't want to ruin the movie for Rebecca, but that one part of the movie – when that woman says that she wanted to work there.
Yeah.
And I said, why do you want to work here? Because she really, it was just like too much for her. And then she says, because I want to hurt. And then she stopped. And everyone laughed. And she goes, because I want to make people feel the way I was made to feel here. Mm. And I was like, wow.
That got dark.
That's when I knew I was done. I didn't have to film there anymore. I was like, I've got it. Yeah. This is the moment where you can see it. But at the same time, what's a fraternity? For 1 year, someone is humiliating you, degrading you, doing terrible things to you, And then your reward is for 3 years you get to do that to somebody else. And people die doing that. Hmm. And people – someone died recently being hazed at a fraternity. Yeah. And it happens all the time. But only difference is that doesn't happen in some guy's backyard. That happens at a really prestigious institution. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, look at
what
some of – yeah, right? I'm not – definitely, look, I remember when I was in school and some guys were like, you should join our frat. I'm like, no, it's not for me at all. Yeah.
No, I did junior high and high school. I've had enough harassment.
It's the Groucho Marx problem.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, don't join a group that would have you. I wouldn't want to be a member of any group that would have me as a member. So.
Oh, totally. Like, yeah. like growing up, like Donald. So Donald in the movie, they got the dark glasses. Who did the maze in his parents' driveway. His whole family loves except for his wife. So he looks just like the Terminator. When you look at him with the dark glasses and everything. And I grew up with him, and he's still my best friend. We met because I was reading Fangoria the first day of school. I was the new kid, and I had a backpack full of Fangorias. And he was like, that's really cool. And then we started talking, and then he says, you know, they do a haunt here during the fall carnival. I'm like, let's do it. So we were like, we had all the fake blood. Yeah. We were like the, you know, before the movie Summer School came out, it was like, we're the summer school kids.
Yeah.
And we scared the kids so bad in that maze that they broke through the cardboard walls to get away from us. And we were the most bullied kids ever at that school. Mm. And he was the most bullied kid when he went home. You know, and I've been wanting to interview him and his family forever because I was just like, couldn't, you know, when he told me, we stayed friends, but I would never go visit his, he's like, hey, we're doing something at the house. I'm like, I'm not going over there. You know, it's like the Manson family barbecue. You know, people get arrested on Mother's Day over there. I'm not going. It's a bunch of guys who, you know, ex-Navy SEAL, ex-Marines. I don't need it. Mm-hmm. And he told me, you know, I'm doing a haunt with my family. It's really great. I'm like, there's no way in hell I would go. And then I kept hearing about it, and I kept hearing, oh, this is really and actually, it's a good thing. I went there, and I saw it, and I was like, oh, my God, this haunt brought a dysfunctional family together.
Oh.
I know. It's like, that's the thing. It's like, some people were like, why didn't you just make the movie just McCamey Manor? I'm like, you know what? If you put all these different things in there, you show a legendary scare actor who cares so much about what she does, and you hear about the fight or flight reactions, and you see a monster get punched, and immediately you laugh because it's hilarious. And then you start hearing about the amount of pain that they're going through and all the different surgeries that they have to deal with. And you're going, oh, my God, she's like the Muhammad Ali of haunting. She's staying in it for so long because she's so good at it. And she's also like the Neil Armstrong of haunting. She's done every kind of haunt first. Like, it's one of those things where someone else will do it. But she did hayrides, home haunts. She did Delusion, Blackout, Not Scary Farm. She's done everything. So I'm like, wow, the fact that all these people are in one movie. And of course, McCamey Manor, Russ has a big part. He's the main character. And everyone kept saying, you know, some people would ask me about that. I'm like, well, look, yeah. So the one who's doing the most insane thing, I can't believe. I don't even believe this is happening. This is really has blurred a line between reality and fantasy like I've never seen before. And I'm constantly wondering what the hell's going to happen next. Yeah, I should just make him a side character. You know, it's like
So you owe it to a documentary. It's like A Search for Truth. You owe it because he might never let anyone else do that again.
Yeah.
And so you have that access. So it's kind of like you have to get that.
Yeah, he's let other people do little tiny things since.
Small
little things. Never again.
And then he'll watch this and he won't want to expose himself again in the same way.
Well, actually, I it's been a while since I've seen the film, so I don't remember exactly where you leave off with Russ. Mm-hmm. What year is the last time he shot with him? But as early as last year, I read that it kind of became too much for San Diego, and he was trying to move south to Alabama and Tennessee and stuff like that, and that hasn't worked out. So where is he right now, and what's McCamey Manor right now if it still exists?
In the credits, we break through the credits, and he chimes in with what's been going on with him. Mm. But now he's in Tennessee.
Oh, weird. And we're about to be in Tennessee.
Yeah. Well,
what part of Tennessee?
No.
I mean, well, I'd okay, be curious.
But the Tennessee one's more.
Oh, that's great.
That's safe for me.
But the Tennessee one's a safer, more commercial version of it, or what?
Well,
I'm looking at this wording in this article about it.
Yeah, he's this one he's making money off of, at least.
Okay, so it's.
But some things have changed. I mean, it's definitely. I would never use the word safe because you have to go off of the person's judgment who's in charge as to what safe is. But what's really interesting, though, is like law enforcement contacted me after the movie came out. And I got some calls from people in Tennessee. And this guy, a sheriff's department, called. And they're like, is this real? I'm like, yeah. Like, but is this really real? I'm like, yeah, it is real. It's like Blair Witch real or like or like, you know, like really actual facts. I'm like, it's actual facts. This, and I said, can I please record this? He's like, no, you can't. He's like, so there's no safe word. There's no way these people can get out. I'm like, no. He's like, thank you. And so McCamey Manor now has a safe word, which I think is great. I think every experience has to have a safe word. Mm-hmm.
I'm just playing devil's advocate for the sake of this interview in a lot of ways because, you know, of course, I'm pretty empathetic in general. But one thing that he said that is true about the safe word in his particular thing is if I had a safe word, everyone would use it in the first 30 seconds of my haunt because it's so crazy. Yep. And so that part I understood. So maybe there need to be like a 10-minute
minute buffer before you use it.
You use the safe word, we get to go for 10 more minutes before we stop.
When I told him – he did say stuff like that to me. Yeah. I said to him, listen, what movie starts off at 1,000%.
Yeah, right.
You know, when you tell a story, because he's a director first. I'm like, okay, well, if you're directing a movie, then you have to have a beginning. And we have to build. And we have to get somewhere. At least give them a chance to
see
it.
Not a Rob Zombie movie. Yeah. He told me he's doing a Rob Zombie movie.
Hey, Rob Zombie movie. That's not true. Rob Zombie movies have
1,000 corpses, maybe. Well,
31 starts with a bus ride, and then it gets crazy.
But here's a monologue, at least.
Yeah, you got a monologue.
He said, good movie. Good movie. Let's change that to good.
But here's what terrifies me after seeing your movie and seeing what Russ does. This article is from 2017 about him moving south, and it says that the Nashville attraction will be, quote, the most toned-down version of McCamey Manor ever presented, end quote, and will be open to members of the general public 18 and older. He's also planning including children's haunt and kid-friendly activities like zombie laser tag.
Right.
So he's turning it into a family fun zone.
I don't know if this guy is.
Sledgehammer chair.
I would not let. Well, you I don't even have kids, but I would not let your kids anywhere near guy.
You saw him as a wedding DJ. He's a great wedding DJ.
Uncle Rob's not going to take Marnie to that place.
No, we're not going to McCamey Manor, Marnie.
Look, also, look where the quotes are coming from. Is it so like Russ McCamey said?
Yeah.
Okay,
it's
so,
him.
So what I'm saying is, look where the quotes are coming from. So it's one of those things, too, where. Look, Russ.
Unreliable narrator? Is that what you're saying?
It's like Cabinet of Dr. Kilgari. Yeah. You're right. It's like totally like who's whenever he would tell me something, like he's like when he was in San Diego, he's like, we have five locations, the red base, the green base, base three. I'm like, oh, base three. You can go with orange. Go with orange. And finally it was like, it's all in the backyard. Yeah. But he kept telling people it was all over the place. Yeah. And so
He's a storyteller.
He's a storyteller. And when he kept telling me he's a director. You know, it's funny. I went to a really interesting party, and this guy is a great writer. He actually co-wrote Doctor Strange, and he writes a lot of cool projects.
Cargill?
Not Cargill. The other guy, the guy who lives up here. I'm forgetting his name right now. He was telling me, hey, we're going to show these videos. You're not going to believe it. I heard you like haunt stuff. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, this is the most extreme haunt in the world. I'm like, McCamey Manor? He's like, yeah. He's like, that one's not in your movie, right? I'm like, that, yes, he's in my movie. He's like, what do you – he's like, he gets people together and they were watching it.
Yeah.
And I started meeting other people that watch it together with other people. And look, some of his videos have 10 million views. And he wasn't monetizing those. And I asked him, why weren't you monetizing them? And he's like, the ads block the stuff.
Yeah.
I don't want to ruin the movie.
He's an artist.
Look, you know, it's
can't have an ad. Pop
I mean, he
up.
Was spending $1 million of his own money. I bet over time because he said $500,000 at one point.
Yeah, and I believe that when I saw all the stuff that was in there, I'm looking at different. I was taking pictures and filming. And I'm going okay. Then I started looking up stuff from Transworld, And I know that he would go to Transworld.
Does he go to Transworld?
Oh, yeah.
That seems so vanilla for him.
Oh, look, he's been like he was a speaker there. He's been interviewed there. He's been at all the horror and haunt conventions at one point in time or another. He was on every...
I love that he stays active in the community, because haunts, just like horrors has haunts, or horror has conventions. Yeah. There's a whole chain of haunt conventions as well.
I used to do
East Coast Haunters, and mm-hmm. I've been to Transworld a bunch.
He films every booth at Transworld. He puts out a video every year where it's like, this is booth number one.
Oh, my gosh.
And he gets to every single booth, so people will watch to see all the booths that he films. Like, he does love this stuff. But, it's a trip. I mean, there was this one where we were showing... Haunters at Fantastic Fest, and this guy's bringing his 11-year-old kid to go see the movie. I'm like, no, I don't think your kid should see this. And his son was like, sir, if I may. And I was like, okay, already he can see it. He says, if I may. I've seen the trailer. I think I can handle this. If I can't, I'll tell my dad. And his dad was like, he can handle this. And I was like, there's complicated things in here we're dealing with. And the kid watches it. That kid got it more than most anyone else. And he had so much to say about what he thinks Russ is about. And I was like, this kid got everything. Mm. I mean, this kid was real, I don't know. It's such a funny kid, because he kept bringing up Russ's dad. Because it's a part in the film where we talk about Russ's father. And, you know, some people thought I was putting that part in there to make you feel sorry for Russ. Mm. And it's like, no. Basically, the little spoiler alert for this part is Russ's father was in the military. And remember when they nuked soldiers in Nevada? They dropped the bomb there, and they wanted to see how it would affect the soldiers. And, of course, what happens? They just die for the rest of their lives in horrible pain. And when Russ got married and was settled down, and his dad, you know, wrote him a letter and killed himself. And it's one of those things where it's like Russ...
Because of the pain he was in.
Because of the pain he was in. Yeah, he couldn't deal with it anymore. Think of it this way. Russ joined the same branch of the military that his father was in. If your parent was nuked by the American government and they were a soldier, would your first response be, I got to join the same branch because I love my dad so much? Or would your response be, I love my dad so much, I'm going to be the greatest protester of all time. I'm going to actually lead a movement. I'm going to do something. You know, I've heard activist stories that start that way. Mm-hmm. I've never heard of a story like that started that way. It was interesting that little 11-year-old boy said, you know, he just has a very different moral compass. I was like, moral compass? He's like, he has a different view of what's too much. Because if he saw what happened with his father and he just joined the same branch, trusting the military again and the government again, I was like, oh my God, this kid is really something. And it's a trip. Mm-hmm. Like, I think people are just – they're so fascinating. And the second we just go, oh, this person's sick, they're psychotic, they're this, they're that, you put a label on them and it's over. When you try to understand them a little bit, even just a little bit, I wanted to at least a moment in the film with each person that you could empathize with them or care about them at least once, you know? And then you can have your judgments. You can think what you want to think. You can, you know.
I don't think the film's judgmental at all.
No,
I think he left it open enough for all of the characters I met. I was just making my own.
Oh, definitely. No, I agree. There's a reason I don't narrate it.
Yeah.
There's a reason I don't tell you. Like, if I did a voiceover, if I put myself in there.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, I'm not going to tell you how to think. I'm not going to chew the food for you. You're going to figure it out on your own. And what's interesting is, like, Russ and everyone else that's in it, they all said the same thing. They're like, that's exactly me.
Yeah.
I was getting stressed on Russ and what he was going to say. And he's like, there's some stuff I didn't appreciate in the movie, but it's exactly who I am. And I felt really good about that. Char feels the same way. And Donald's wife is really happy with the movie. Right.
Yeah, people, you got to see this. I mean, I think even if this isn't your world, if you're listening to this, go, oh, I can't stand haunts. This crazy stuff, too scary. I think just watch the film. This will give you the whole world and taste of it without having to experience it. You know,
yes,
it's really. I thought it was really interesting.
So, thanks, and that's the point of it too. Is my first cut of this movie could have been called Hauntapalooza. It was like so much haunt. Mm-hmm. I think I had like 13 haunts, and I was equally covered. I'm like, I wanted to show just how epic the thing was, and I wanted to show you the best shots that I could possibly get. You know, I got a red dragon. I really wanted to show off that footage. But the more I was noticing, I was like, well, if you love haunts, it was great. If you didn't, you didn't. I'm like, well, I'm not making a haunt video yearbook. I'm not making something like a chocolate bar for people who like chocolate only. I want to make something where you're, you know, there's a haunt widow section in this movie. You know, my wife will go to a haunt, you know. I told her from the start, like, look, you have to know something about me. Halloween's very important to me. Halloween and horror. I'm really, really into this stuff. She didn't really realize how important it was to me. But I want to make sure that even a spouse that is not into it could get into this. And I was testing it and testing on people until we started realizing this is it. People are just – This is the version of the movie that picks a fight with the audience. Mm-hmm. And when someone picks a fight with you or starts a debate with you, what do? You choose a side, and then you become passionate about it. And we've been getting – oh, my God, the amount of like messages we've been getting from people who have never gone to a haunt before. Then after the movie, I played at Fantastic Fest last year. Some of the people that were in town from England that were supposed to go back went to Halloween Horror Nights for their first time. And they went to some of the home hunts, Rotten Apple 907s in the beginning of the movie. They went to that home hunt, and they were just looking through the credits and remembering those parts and going off to those different places. Char is now, I mean, she goes to Whole Foods.
What's Char's last name?
Mayer.
Okay.
Char Mayer. You know, she's the amount of people who are like wanting to become scare actors and asking her for help. And, you know, when you watch her in the movie too, like I didn't think too hard about what everyone's lower thirds were going to be, you know, because there's a million other things you got to do when you're making this stuff. But when it came to her, I was like, it has to be legendary scare actor. I want people to know that what she's done is like, it's incredible. That and the other guy that said, Craig, not a haunt fan, because that's how he introduced himself to me. He's like, I'm not a haunt fan. So I'm like, that's your lower third. Mm. But yeah, no, it's really cool to see that from this, Char has been getting more opportunities. She just got cast in a movie.
Oh, wow.
I'm so excited about that. Donald has he got some gigs. He got hired to put on some haunts, which is fantastic.
Well, I think when you talk about picking a site, and I know we're wrapping it up, but what I find is like you could be watching Russ and go, oh, this guy, what a son of a bitch. And as soon as I start hearing, oh, he's getting multiple death threats, suddenly I'm on his side. I don't care what.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like the guy's trying to put on a show. However you view the show, it might be wrong.
That people
but
obviously
when somebody says they're
going
to kill you because it's like, fuck off. Like,
oh,
sorry,
some people threatened me when I announced, oh, here's the people who are going to be in the movie. And then I started getting some weird phone calls, weird emails, and I was like, wow, so you're the good guys.
Yeah, exactly.
You're the good guys. Exactly, threatening. Right? Like, plus, it's like
the moral high ground, but you use threats, you know?
I know. It's like one of those. I mean, someone even told me that, like, it's like you made a commercial for McCamey Manor. I said, did you see it? He goes, yeah. Do you want to go? No. I'm like, sounds like it's a really shitty commercial.
Yeah.
It's not a commercial. I want to show you exactly as it is.
Yeah.
So you can really make up your own mind.
And that was actually my initial conflicted feeling about it because of how uncomfortable McCamey – because you start in one direction and then once you meet Russ, which I don't even know how long into the movie it is, maybe 20, 30 minutes, whatever it is. Once you meet him, you start going all in on him. And I'm like, why are we going down this
path? We're doing the tunnel
like
upset. I'm going, yes, I want more of that.
Like, yes, yeah, he's the reason I want to go home and watch this now. God. Is I'm like, yeah, blackout, done that. This guy sounds like a fucking character.
Yes,
like he's
character
my motivation
for sure.
Now. Not that I wouldn't have watched it anyway. But now I'm like, okay, I have to see this guy.
And that's the other fun part of it, too, is like, look, The American Scream's a great movie. Mm-hmm. I love that movie. But there's 60 seconds of haunt at the end. It's because they're filming one season. Throughout the movie, there is so much haunt, and I'm being like brutal with my own footage. I'm like, okay, I'm just showing you like the best stuff in these montages here. I'm going to show you this. And that's why, like, look, I have these bonus features that I spent so much time on because I really wanted to give them like the best treatment ever. It's 30 minutes of bonus features. They're like 7 mini documentaries. You get a look at Knott's Scare School. You get John Murdy from Universal Studios. You get to see the first haunt he ever made, which was a Star Wars haunted house in the 70s when he was a kid, and he made the costumes the year the movie came out. There's Jen and Sylvia Saska. Mm-hmm. You get more with them. You even get Haunted Overload, the giant skull that's in the movie. You get their story. Delusion. You get like 3 years of delusion in like a packed 5 minutes.
Now, did you, and I assume it eventually got cut in lieu of the Extreme Haunts, but did you do some of the more kind of giant, nationally renowned haunted houses like Erebus or Netherworld or I can't even remember the one in New Orleans that I did that was like crazy cool. There was like some really – a couple of years ago, actually I think it might have been my second or last year with Fangoria, we did a haunted house edition, a special edition. And we did the 10 best haunts. And in order to compile that, I literally for about 2 months traveled the country doing all of these like – fucking amazing haunts, many of which stay open year round.
Right. I read that.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad. I loved it. Thanks. I also did the whole, like, it was like a 10 page history of haunted houses, like going back to Victorian times. So yeah, but I mean, for that, they flew me around to these like crazy ones that were just like giant. I mean, like they honestly, some of them put the mazes at Universal to shame, and I hate to say that, but like going through some of these ones that, you know, were inside that they'd crafted, right. All of these devices. Like I remember at Erebus, they actually had a swamp. And they used car, like the airbags that come out would inflate around you to trap you and then release. And it was just so complicated and beautiful. So were those originally part of it, or were you kind of avoiding those in lieu of more of experience?
I tried. I wanted to see how wide of a net can I cast and who can I get? And there were a lot of people who just told me no, they just weren't going to do it. And I got it because someone would say things like, we hate those flow videos. Because it's like, when you think about it, someone walks through with a video camera with a light on top and they just walk around pointing it. They've just killed everything you've done.
Yeah.
You know, it's like holding up a cell phone to an IMAX screen. It's the worst thing ever for them. And I wasn't able to convince them to let me. So I'm like, all right. But I did get, you know, Universal. We have stuff from Knott's. Mm-hmm. We have stuff from Haunted Overload. You actually get some gorgeous time lapse of Haunted Overload. And you get to see them like walk, you know, they have a 4-story tall skull being built. You get to see that in time lapse being built, and it's absolutely amazing. In the bonus features, you get like a very emotional story that will choke you up. I guarantee you, like you'll like, and in a good way. You won't feel it'll. It's amazing. It's kind of magical. But you know, there's definitely and more than the bonus features. But there are these haunt eye candy moments that are so awe inspiring that you get to see. In the movie too, you know, which I'm really, really proud of and happy that it was in there because I wanted to make sure, you know, with like the American Scream, you get that their yard haunt, like one guy is a haunter and there's two guys that have like kind of crazy yards, mm-hmm. you know, with crazy things that happen. And then they show that there's other yard haunts, but you don't get the idea that there's an industry. I wanted to show there is an industry. I want to show you where this is, but we're telling you a story and it's not just going to be, I don't want to say just going to be, info docs are very difficult to make. It's not an info doc. I wanted a documentary that had a history section, but my history section has a crazy pulse to it. And the whole movie, I wanted to feel, you know, like I'm not trying to compare myself to Tarantino, but how he makes you laugh, he makes you scream. It's a horror film, it's a comedy, it's a drama. You know, and I wanted that roller coaster of emotions that you feel when you go through a great attraction anyway. There's always, you know, Reign of Terror. Awesome. I love Reign of Terror. And you're like, wow, what an amazing thing. And then you get scared. And then there's always a toilet bowl gag that's so gross it makes you gag. Like, why is this even in here? Mm-hmm. And you get mad that it was there. And the next thing makes you laugh. You know, I wanted that kind of wild experience where you get to get into a subculture and, you know, leave feeling like you got to really explore it in a way that you never would have otherwise.
Well, yeah, you get a taste of everything. So, okay, so your film's on Netflix. There's a movie in theaters coming out soon that we saw a trailer to. What was that
Hellride.
One? Hellride, which looks like it's set in that kind of world, like a big theme park. Is that the theme park?
It looked like a theme park,
but yeah. It's a horror theme park, yeah. And then there's a slasher killing people there. And then there's the one I was thinking about that Mike Williamson showed us that, like, with John Hawkes. Do you remember that? At Jump Cut?
Oh, scary movie.
Yeah. Which wasn't a great movie, but it was cool seeing that world of, like, you know, kind of as a homemade, it's a mixture. Wait,
was it Hellride or Hellfest?
I think that Hellfest. The name of the movie is, yeah, it's Hellfest.
Yeah, there's ads for it, so it's coming out right now.
But anyway,
okay,
I
heard, so the writer and the writer came up to me of Hellfest, mm-hmm. and also one of the director, and they were telling me that, because that's produced by Gail Ann Hurd.
Yeah, it's a big movie.
And she was they were getting reaction shots, and she goes, no, get it like how it is in Haunters, The Art of the Scare. And I was like, what? She was telling everyone to watch the movie. I'm like, oh my God, I want to meet Gail Earhart. This is so cool.
To me, it looks like Scream, because he even has the girl from Scream, right?
Yeah.
It just looks like Scream is a big movie. But anyway, so that's not there. So watch Haunters to set the table with Haunters, and then go watch.
And
well,
also,
quite frankly, if I may, you need to watch Extremity, which is Anthony DeBlasio's new movie, which I'm putting out on October 2nd, because it is literally the narrative version of McCanny Man.
Oh, nice.
And that's what's cool about it. And the idea is, those people that go in, you know, when is too far too far?
That's the cool thing about Extremity, is that there's a character through line through that that is something I brought up to Russ many times at McCamey Manor. Like, what if someone like this comes here? What if something what if this scenario were to happen? And because I kept wondering what that would be like, and it's really cool to see it play out in Extremity. Also, there are moments in Extremity. They're like shot for shot. That's Blackout. That's McCamey.
Yeah, flashbacks. Okay, cool.
And so watch Haunters first to get the
context. Yeah, and actually it was funny because when we did the premiere the other day, which Sean was at, and he interviews Anthony DeBlasio on the Blu-ray.
Okay, cool.
I thought it'd be funny to get the two of them together. And when I got up, I was like, if you think this movie that I just showed you is far-fetched, there's a documentary called Haunters. So I do think Haunters is the perfect homework or chaser, either or. I think you should watch both. I think they complement each other very well.
Nice. Oh, definitely. I think it's a great 1-2 punch. But there's also, there's so many. It's like a whole now subgenre.
Because I was going to say, Elric just sent me a link this week that Hell House LLC, I have been talking about for the past 6 months on Shockwave, saying that the guys need to watch it, but it's found footage, so I really have to convince people that it's really good. They just greenlit a sequel to it.
Actually, I thought it was a green light, but I saw Sam Zimmerman tweet yesterday saying it's coming out tomorrow.
Oh, it's
wait,
done.
What?
Yeah, he's like about to drop it on Shudder. Like,
yeah, that article that you sent me was like it's like a green light thing.
So,
okay,
it sounds like it's about to come. He's already got it done. So
I really love that movie.
So did I. I was shocked by it. I found that one. Somebody, Kaylee, a friend of mine, or Katie, a friend of mine from Phoenix Comic Con, had come up and been like, "I know you like really scary stuff. You have to go home and watch this. It's on Amazon Prime." And I watched it the night I got back, and I almost turned it off a couple of times because I hate found footage so much. And it was maybe 20 minutes in that I was like, "I'm really into this." And then the scares started, and I was so impressed by how well they were orchestrated.
Yeah.
On a shoestring budget, like I can't picture that movie costing more than like 50.
Right.
So how well they were able to pull off some really terrifying shit on that was really impressive. I'm glad they got a second one.
But there are your options. You can start with all these. We have to wrap.
Yes.
I gotta pee. Okay.
Yeah, we gotta pee. I want two things that we have to do for the Halloween season.
Okay. Look, Halloween Horror Nights, Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights has some great mazes this year. Their Poltergeist maze is awesome.
Ryan just talked about it. He said it's great.
I did it 4 times.
Okay, cool.
That was incredible.
Front of the line though. You gotta get front of the line pass.
You have to get front of the line pass. Do the Poltergeist maze, but I think the mazes you're going to talk about the most will be Poltergeist, Trick or Treat. It's Trick or Treat. It's awesome. Stranger Things, but the number one maze there for me this year was Universal Monsters.
And don't tell me anything about it because I made Ryan not say anything about it.
I won't, but I'll say
other than it's cool.
They had a vision for it. They have love for those monsters. And
unlike the people in the movie division,
right? Well, hey, look, pick a studio.
Yeah,
you know they don't see what we all see in it, and there's even. They gave me a behind the scenes tour, and they let me film the behind the scenes tour. I'm gonna put a little something together and put it out this haunt season, because when they showed me how everything was gonna work, and then I did it, and it scared me. And there's even like a moment where I got emotional. I was like, you know what, it's everything I love about great monster movies.
Yeah.
But I would definitely say this is also the year for Darren Lynn Bousman has Theater Macabre.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's he brought us tension.
Now
somebody told me that he couldn't, a friend of mine goes, "I don't think I can go because I heard there's a live sex act on stage and I think I can't go." And then I saw Bowser and I'm like, "I heard this one's even crazy." He goes, "This one's way more tame." And I'm like, "Who to believe?" I don't know who to believe.
You don't know, but I mean, I definitely want to check that out. Creep LA.
Darren Bousman's calling you right now, by the way. That was crazy. He had his phone in his lap and it just popped up. Darren Bousman is calling.
Do you want to take a call?
Yeah, take the call.
Bousman, I have to say, when my movie, the day it went on iTunes, he sent me a friend request on Facebook. And I was like, "Darren Bousman, this is so great." And I said, "Hey, thanks for the ad." And he's like, "When do you want to get dinner? I want to talk about this movie right now." And we sat down and talked. It was amazing. He's been really great. He's such a great supportive guy. But also, God, there's so many. So Creep LA has a wake this year. Have you ever done Creep LA? Creep is really cool because it's done by Justin Fix. And he's a choreographer. He's a storyteller. I think he did the choreography for the what's those movies with Anna Kendrick where she's singing?
The Pitch Perfect movies. Are you fucking serious?
He did the choreography for that. He also did the Lore Experience last year, which was cool. Mm. You know, the Lore podcast. He actually brought that to life. So what he does is just it's cool. It's immersive theater. If you read the description on the website, it's avant-garde. It's interesting. You'll have a great time.
Okay.
You know, that's another one to go check out. Delusion is sold out. Get on their standby line. There's always people that cancel last minute, and this year is going to be massive. There's just so many choices. Home Haunts, I'd say I'm going to give away a secret. I go to Rotten Apple 907.
That one's right down the street from me, and I'm so excited this year because last year I went twice, and both times it was like a three-hour wait. And this time I'm like, I'm just going to walk down and see how the wait is.
And you know, last year was like their toughest year because their storage facility flooded. And almost all the stuff they've been working on for years was destroyed.
Oh, no.
And when they opened it up, they were attacked by bees. There was a bee's nest in there, or a wasp nest. They got attacked. And then they were like, we're not going to have enough to have like wall-to-wall crazy stuff. So the middle part of the haunt was all in darkness, and you heard the sound of bees.
Anyway, Rob telling us that we need to wrap up?
We got to wrap up, guys. Okay. I can't handle the show longer than 2 hours.
Okay. There's so many more experiences to go to. If you go to hauntersmovie.com, I will put all my whole list up on hauntersmovie.com. Plus, can I say one thing I got to pitch? On the 25th, we're having a watch party Q&A. Char, Donald, people who survived McCamey Manor. It's going to be on Dead Meat James' YouTube channel. And you're going to watch the movie with us. You ask us questions. We answer them. Our favorite questions get prizes. But I've been doing contests every day on Haunters the Movie on Facebook. We're giving away shirts, DVDs, all kinds of stuff because I like to feel like I'm also a game show host. and giving away all kinds of fun prizes. And yeah, we got awesome merch through Fright Rags. I can't believe we're the first documentary to ever have merch Fright Rags. I'm a horror fan. My mind is blown. So the watch party, September 25th, it's a Tuesday night. You've got nothing to do at 6 p.m. on a Tuesday. Join us. It's going to be a ton of fun. And yeah, you can RSVP on our website also, hauntersmovie.com.
Yep. Use your Shockwaves code at Fright Rags.
Yes.
10% off.
Summer Shock 10. Okay, guys. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks, Sean.
Yeah.
You got it.